Right, this is going to be another episode of Snake and Banter. Our guest for this one is a return guest. It is Sponge, a.k.a. Chad Birchall. You know, what's funny is I don't ever even use people's names, ever, Chad. Like, put it this way, I am actual personal close friends with Monte Cristo. I have called him Monty as if that was his real name, probably like 99.987% time. I might have one time, just to fuck with him when I was annoyed, caught said Christopher, like, in that way, like your mother does, like, Christopher, like, but aside from that, I've put it this way, if his kid was there, I'd go, what's Monty doing? Like, you know, like, that's how I am. But this is where I hate branding, because that means Machine's got in my head when he just kept saying about Chad Birchall all the time. He's done the branding. He's imprinted in my brain that I had to say it as I said it. Okay.
I didn't even know what Monty's real name was, so I'm glad that I worked for the guy. True. So, you know. True.
Also, by the way, come on.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to know, is it just my saturation or do I look like I have jaundice?
You look a bit beige, put that way. But here's the thing, Chad. Right. No one could ever say as a talent that you're beige. There you go. That's sorry. Wasn't even that good. I'll leave it. By the way, one little detail, Chad. One, thanks to the people from Talking Counter for the little ego boost. Because when I did the most recent episode of Talking Counter and I looked, it's like the 10th highest viewed fucking video on the channel. So it's like, oh, by the way, that doesn't even make sense to me, Chad. Like, it's not that I'm joining with the haters who hate me and Richard Lewis, etc. But it is insane to me that a 42-year-old boomer who just never played CS in any context pro has more than, like, the Flames episode, etc. Like, I don't know. I actually sort of look down on you fans at this point in time. Like, what are you here for? Are you not actually even fans of the game? But here's the other thing, Chad. I said this on the episode. I actually initially thought, oh, we're doing that silly beggars thing they do in talent where there's the group chat within the group chat in the WhatsApp. And then you're like, hey, guys, are you going out tonight? And then they're like, nah, early one. And then you see them all meeting in the lobby. Like, oh, they're off to the club. So I thought, Chad, wait a minute. A second episode I've been invited on a Talking Counter, but it's always the ones where Chad's not available. But as I said in the intro, so I thought, oh, fucking hell. Oh, is it like a North? Is that his like rider, like North Orange? But then the joke is, as I said on the episode, Sponge, I actually realised there's a more cynical interpretation, which is no, I'm just the only person Moses knows from long history will always say, yeah, I could do a podcast tomorrow. If you run out at the last second, I'm the only guy you could probably message, like, can you turn up tomorrow? Like, yeah, fuck it, why not? Like, so it wasn't even about you, Chad. It wasn't about you. It's all still good. There's no Cold War, apparently.
No, fair enough. I think, you know, the name value, Duncan, you're bringing the views, that's okay. For sure. But the other side of things, and you know this one well, you know, any of our stuff that ends up on Reddit with a player just gets fucking, no, not even with a player, just in general, just gets downvoted to a
blue. Oh, really? Right? So, what the fuck?
Can't get any traction out there, Duncan. Hell. It's fucking tough, mate.
Fucking hell. Why are fans so bad? Because here's the thing that they're so bad about. They'll love some, like, super low-quality meme. And then, like, you'll do like that. Like, oh, I've given you, like, a three-hour podcast with your favourite player. They're like, nah, I don't like this. Like, why? Yeah. Why? Surely of all the people, you should be the ones who love it, you idiots. It's for you.
But there's a Kassad tweet on there as of 42 minutes ago. You know, there's stuff out there. People just have to look.
Oh, by the way, there's another thing as well that I also blame that community for. You do realise with people like Kassad, he isn't like you Zoomers. He isn't going like, oh, it's all hurting my feelings that you're making my tweets the most important thing in the whole community. He's fucking loving it. He's all lucky getting off on you idiots. Like, this is a toxic feedback loop you're all engaged in. Because guess what? You all give him all the attention. Remember, he also is just like some fucking middle-aged boomer who like used to play CS badly with Yanko, who wasn't even good anyway, about 20 years ago. So it's like, you're making this guy the centre of attention every time he tweets. I wonder if he's going to stop tweeting. Oh, what's that? He's got more tweets. Yes. Exactly, sir. Exactly. And also, now he's actually fucking doxing people, allegedly. So I don't know why that's happening. Oh, I even saw that. I was like, oh, come on, reel it in. God. Don't fucking put, you know, whatever. It's all good. Here's the thing. Even good men slip up every now and then. But that was a fuck up, though. Come on, bro. Don't put someone's passport on the internet. Please, please don't dox me. I know, don't put anyone's, quite frankly. I know.
Doxing yourself.
Just go ahead and double check all that and redact it all, mate. Just put a big black box over it and forget it ever happened. Anyway, let's get into the episode. So, Chad, we always have the guest go first. So the question is, what is good in CS at the moment? What are you enjoying?
It doesn't feel like a good when I wrote it, but I think it is good. Okay. The map pool's not that bad. Or maybe I'll just go with the map pool is okay. Because that's one of
you've taken as the good point, and 1 second in, you were like, maybe it's just okay, actually. It's just the okay point. Like, listen, you have to defend that it's good. So give me some angles here. Give me some angles. This is an edgy take, I think. I think a lot of people hate the map pool, bro. So where are you going with this?
What I wrote to you was the map pool is fine. Right. That's okay. What I wrote.
Yeah, that could be good, I guess.
Yeah.
Expectations and all that.
when I look at like the conversation around the map pool, right, I think a lot of it is bedded in like nostalgia or like personal opinion, because a map is like subjective. There's certain maps like Vertigo to watch that were dog shit, but Vertigo to play was actually kind of fun. Now, for the point of this conversation, I imagine we're looking at things from the perspective of watching, right? Because that's, you know, where we do most of our, well, that's what we do all of our takes from, right? As people who are watching and consuming the game. So from that standpoint, I actually think it's fine, right? Because you got your bread and butter maps, like the classics of Mirage and Dust 2, which are, sure, still the nuances there with the utility, but pretty played out, comes down to like a lot of winning your fights, and then it can be very clutch heavy in the post plants and everything like that, which is fun because they're different scenarios and we get to see the more intense moments of those. Then we can get into like our Infernos and our Nukes, which are both like very utility heavy, quite geeky, but have their nuances to them as well. With, you know, like Nuke, for example, the utility is used to make space and force rotations. With Inferno, the utility is used to take space, own space, and then be able to use that to, you know, either, you know, force that third man rotate or force like an info play into a setup where you're waiting on the T side. And I think that those dynamics are fun. So like you contrast Inferno and Nuke to Mirage and Dust 2, you know, you've got quite different styles of maps that are being played out there. And then you throw in the exotics, which is where there is probably the most complaints, right? Anubis, hated by the pros, but I think it's hated by the pros because it forces them to be just playing out of the box compared to all the other maps. Do I think it's great, the map? No. Do I think it needs some adjustments? Yeah. But does it bring something from a viewer perspective that is different? Yeah. Like the constant need for aggression on the CT side. That balance, this is probably the weakest point of this argument. Okay. I think Anubis is the one that is the most flawed out of them. I think Ancient is the best map in the pool. I think it's the best map that we've had in Counter-Strike in some time. I think you can have slow and fast, right, on CT, on T side. Like, you can play it a whole bunch of different ways. I think the meta in terms of like middle and B lane is always just slowly evolving with different pieces of utility or a different flash or a different timing, and that's really fun to watch. And then on the CT side, there's plenty of options available. You can go aggressive early. You can go aggressive mid-round. You can take space early over towards A main, give up middle, force them into like 180 degrees worth of crossfires coming into the A side. Like, I think there's a lot you can do on Ancient, and it's, in my opinion, the best map in the pool. And then Train, which, you know, there was something that came out saying, oh, it's by far the least played map of the year. Of course, it just came in.
Yeah,
it replaced Vertigo, right, which was already a banned for a lot of the good teams. And then it's still a map that's like being fleshed out. So you're not going to pick it in high pressure matches. We've only had it show up in the last couple of best of fives, right? And the games on it aren't bad. The games don't feel like they're shit matches of CS. So like, people wanting different maps in the map pool, Vertigo shit. Cash is a nostalgia thing, but I think we could get it in the future. I think it could play out fine. Cobblestone is being cannibalized. Overpass is slow, boring, and save heavy. So the map pool as it is right now is fine. Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
I've said that this is the best map pool since the pre-Vertigo days. I think that was 2018. It was a pretty good map pool back when, I can't remember, it was like Overpass and Cash were in the pool along with Train. Vertigo really sucked a lot of enjoyment out of pro CS for me for, yeah, probably like 4 or 5 years, actually. Every time it came on, I was definitely less interested in the map. Because Vertigo was still in the pool when I was competing in the tier 2 NA level. And like, I get it. Like, I defaulted at every position at one point, you know, made strats for like all the different spots and everything. But then in terms of just efficacy, it was pretty much just middle was not used very often, and that kind of bled into the pro scene. It's just like, if you're going down, it just kind of ruined the pool, because it just kind of, the ramp fights were so gimmicky in CSGO because of all the one ways, and then in CS2 it still felt like you could just stay at the bottom of ramp for a minute, and who cares if you go up ramp with 50 seconds left or 45 seconds left. I feel like maps that don't punish you for sitting around as a T are pretty flawed. If you can just retake space with practically nothing, then I don't think that it's a really well-designed map, along with the fact that you kind of had to walk everywhere or else everything you did would be heard. And I'll make a case for Anubis. I don't necessarily think it's a bad map just because it's T-sided. I feel like people reduce their argument to that. But having one map in the pool that is driven by the offense, and then it's up to the CTs to disrupt that, it just makes you rethink your axioms and restructure your strategy, which is unique and adds diversity. I feel like it's interesting that, yes, you are, in fact, weaker when you're playing on the bomb site. If you get executed on and you have three guys on the B bomb site of Anubis, but they're pinching you from E-box and from B main, yeah, you're probably going to lose the bomb site. But I don't think that's necessarily bad. I think it leads to CTs taking some more risks. And for the whole pool to be like that, might make Counter-Strike feel a little bit too topsy-turvy, but for one map in the pool to force aggression, to force the CTs to get off the bomb sites, or else you practically know you're going to lose, I don't think that's bad. The other maps you mentioned, Ancient. Ancient's been my favorite spectator map for a couple of years now. I think Dust 2 is actually, it plays out actually really well in CS2. Maybe it's a little bit too samey now because most of the top teams go for very similar plays with pack control, but I would just think that the interactions between nades and smokes has made it feel fresher than it did in CSGO. CSGO, it did feel stale, but CS2, I think it's just much more interactive. And to me, the worst map in the pool today is Train. And that's not necessarily, I'm not really sure yet if it is purely a flaw in how the map is designed or that there hasn't been any significant meta development. Because when I watch a grand final, consecutive grand finals, really, of Vitality in Melbourne versus MAUS, in Lisbon against MAUS, and then in Melbourne against Falcons, and then they're just running pop and T main splits for 80%+ of their gun rounds, then I start to think, is this map cooked? But reality is, I think just people haven't found a way to make any of the other hits have more impact. I do think Ivy's a little fucked up right now. I do think that pushing into the A bomb site doesn't give you enough sight lines, and there's almost too many good angles to defend people that push through Ivy right now. So it feels a little flat. But whether Valve adjusts the map slightly by changing some of the sight lines and the angles, or people just need to discover a smoke or a molly that's going to open up that side of the map for the T's, either way, I feel like it's not as bad as what Vertigo gave us for 5 years. So yeah, I agree. I think the map pool is, I mean, I've said it before, I just think that the map pool is the best it's been since Vertigo was introduced.
The problem I have with this topic goes like this. It's not fair for me to say the map pool is terrible if there's not really anything that could fix it, if you get what I mean. Like, there has to be like an expectation of like, what could we do? Because the one issue I have is this. If people say, well, what map are you bringing in? Like, look, I would personally, either with no rework or with a rework, just bring back Overpass. I think it did add something extra to the game. I also think the key thing about that map is you will always have tactical CS if that map exists. Like, just the length of it, like the calls you can make on. Like, that, one of the things I think is mad underrated about that map is it's a rare map where both sides can do a really fast rotate in mid if they know what they're doing. Like, that's actually kind of like fucking next level. If you have some godlike IGL, you can make a read, you know. So, but at the same time, aside from bring back Overpass, if you notice every other, like, well, which map would you bring in, basically relies on, like, it'd have to be like the game would almost have to play like it did like 7-8 years ago, like we're talking about here. Like, if you bring back Cash, I mean, first of all, that rework didn't land, did it? Like, the one where it was all green textures and stuff. So we're talking about the real old Cash. Like, look, I did enjoy that map, but I haven't seen it played for about 7 years or something mental at this point in time. What was that? Like, that was like 2018 or something, right? It was the one that Vertigo replaced. So there's that. You got the fucking angle of Cobblestone. Like, I'm sorry, that was a map that almost everyone agreed at the end was sort of played out and a little bit too like one-sided, and it was just, it became like the problems with the old school pre-rework nuke, where it was like, it was just in that case it was how many T rounds can you get. It's that's all the game became, not like there's two sides of dynamics and back and forth. It was like fucking doing rally racing or something. You're not actually racing somebody, you're just racing their time. It's like, how many T-side rounds can I get off? So the problem is, if I look at the current map pool, I know what you mean. Like, it's not as bad as it initially seems. Like, the Train one, I'll actually say, I'll start with that and we'll loop back. So I want to ask you two a question, which is, on Train, I will say this. I think one point Chad made, but he didn't make it more explicit, is the problem with saying Train is the least played map, which was the famous thing for like many years, that used to be the probably one of the most most famous infographics if you did it about Vertigo, because everyone hated Vertigo, is when we said it about Vertigo, that was very meaningful because it'd been out for years and it had all reworks. The problem with saying it about Train, as Chad implies, is it literally replaced Vertigo. So that meant almost every team that banned Vertigo just said, well, why don't we just ban that initially? Like, no one, teams didn't even try it. Like, if you were Na'Vi or these teams that all had the Vertigo power, you just switched it to Train, and then you were just... And if you notice, by the way, here's the telling thing to me, Chad. Almost no one did actually experiment with Vertigo once they decided it sucked. They just stuck with it, and then the only game was who can float it. But no one was picking it.
Yeah.
It was very rare. That's why that Carrigan one where he floated it in the Major was so bizarre. Here's the difference about Train that I'll say gives me an inkling it's not totally cooked, which is teams like the Na'Vis of the world have even tried actually flexing into it when their back pool goes to shit. And I'll tell you what, I have actually seen way more teams intentionally go into this, not because they're specialists who are good on it, because it makes their bad map pool not as bad. The old Falcons, by the way, before they got this roster, was doing it. Like, a lot of teams that didn't have like a pick started to do this as like a weird pick, or we pick it and anyone doesn't ban it, basically. So that implies to me, like, the players at least think there's some more play on it. But I tell you what, before I go on, let me ask about that. I want to throw that back to you, right? You guys sort of loosely touched on it there, but my biggest problem with Train so far has been, it's not even that the map has no chance. It's just it's nothing like any past version of Train. That's the most bizarre part. Like, this is like that meme of like, hey, can we get McDonald's? Like, we got McDonald's at home, and it's just like the burger your mom made. Like, if you want to play Train, you want things like a mega tactical map with all amazing takes and fakes. As you guys just explained, that doesn't really exist. Like, if you go and watch, you've had some exciting games on it. Like, obviously, that fifth map of that fucking the Vitality Mouse was a banger. But the problem is, it was just a DM. Like, essentially, it was like one of those things where you have those like retake servers where you keep spawning in and doing the same take. It's just like that. It's just like who sees each other first, who headshots each other, which, by the way, can have an entertainment value, but that's, I don't think there's much depth there. So that worries me. Like, one of the things, people think Anders is trolling when he says this. I actually think the silliest thing they did was miss the Train part. Like, the beauty of 1.6 Train is you go over all over the trains. You're on top of the trains, you're under the train. Even in CSGO, you're going under it. Because I've always thought the underrated thing about that map, like Maui said about sight lines, is that's one of the ultimate information maps, because someone can literally even be hiding in front of you under the train hitch. You just didn't see them. So that map is all about things like, do you see them before they see you? Do you have an off angle on them? Do you like use the mega long line to spot someone and then rotate to the other side? Like, there's so much tactical play in the old versions of train that so far it doesn't seem like manifested. So does that not concern you, Chad, that this new map's sort of more of just like, it is just kind of shooting people at the moment, right?
It's a pretty drastic, like, overwork when you think about it, like a rework, sorry, from the past iteration. But, like, you're talking about the 1.6 version. You think about the verticality of that map. That was one of the joys, right? Or, like, Neo using the ladders to get some nice movement and whatnot. And then we move into Source, and it was really quite, like, dark and grimy, and there was a lot of, like, shit spots you could just sit in with a Silenced M4 and you're guaranteed to get a kill because, you know, it's just there's so many angles. And then I think that so many angles conversation can start to come into CSGO and then maybe the decision they made for the rework in CS2. So I'm trying to put myself in the spot of the dev of why the rework is so drastic. If you look at it, the amount of angles that were available before just to pick team mid was so vast, right? If you went back six, you could pick either side of the train, you'd go on top of the train, you could be stop, you could be all these different spots. So I think... Like, I'm having to make some real big leaps here, but my assumption is they removed some of the complexity of all those different peaks early and then opened up different avenues of where we might be able to get different forms of action, like Pop. It was cool with Pop before with the two-man, you know, head stack to go, and that was like players having to innovate to the highest of levels to be able to get into a position that if you're going into one at a time, you're going to get fucking slaughtered, right? Like, that was tough as a T. If you don't get Pop control early to do those drop-ins, there was a real... art to that type of part of the map. Now that's the most opened up, which has changed the dynamics we see there. Like, you can get two guys going aggressive Pop, one guy going aggressive B, and you can set up a crossfire at that point that guarantees that they don't have Pop as well as they can't come B, right? So for the CTs, I think it's given them a couple of extra options. But I think Maui's bang on with Ivy. Like, that needs to be more of a functional point of the map because you need to apply more pressure there on the T side. Now, the argument of, you know, this is nothing like old trains. Yeah, I agree. This is nothing like the train that I would have known and loved, which for me with the nostalgia side of things was 1.6 because I liked the verticality.
Yes.
Like, I liked the fact that you could be here, there and everywhere. I think it started, I didn't even like the CSGO one. Like the early one sucked with the bomb train. The
original
angle.
One before the rework, yeah.
Yeah, and then the fucking yellow things that were meant to, they were meant to be full of water. That one, I thought that was pretty trash. I didn't like the Source version because that's where they added, like, like heaven for the CTs got real weird. Like everything just became like overcomplicated. But this current version, I think, like to Maui's point before about them just going like for main pops or whatnot. For Falcons, I can understand that a little bit more. So I think that was like one of Modesty's first train games, maybe second train game, right? So and they'd only had 1.5 days of practice. But I agree with the sentiment that Ivy something needs to change there. Or there needs to be more exploration there, or slow, like Virtus Pro, slow defaults on train, where they would just slowly crunch. Two guys would come like slow Ivy, one guy would go late main, they'd get pop control, and they'd slowly just work down all the angles until you were boxed in, you had no nades late, and you just get fucked on yard. We don't see too many teams opting for that at the moment. So, look, I don't mind train. I think that it's got some fun fights, right? Like, and there's also the different util sets that are, you know, you could, like the inner executes now. I like what we're seeing early, like teams pushing up street and taking the fight to the high ramp guy and then like constricted control, then the retake back in for the CTs is hard. I think this one is a little bit more forgiving on the tees than maybe the CSGO version. So yeah, I don't mind train, to be honest. Okay. I think it's okay.
Then the other thing is, did you have any take on that, Maui? Do you mind that it's not that tactical map, et cetera? Does it need to be? Is it a problem for you?
Well, right now, I feel like a conversation that I had with Dupree about it was kind of interesting because he feels...
By the way, Maui is not actually a shameless name dropper. He actually does mean that, and he's going to give some relevant information there. Go on, keep going.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking the blast green rooms and stuff. I mean, it's he kind of feels that it's T-sided, even though...
Okay, that's a bit of a weird take. Okay.
Yeah, he feels it. He felt like it was T-sided. I kind of explained why I think it's CT-sided. I mean,
yeah, don't get it.
But it's just the T-con split from pop is so powerful, and there's just not enough positions for CTs to stand. Like, I think the best example of this is when you watch, like, it's unfortunately kind of like only at the highest level.
Right.
When you watch Vitality go for their A splits, Mao's or Falcons just always look like they have nowhere to stand, and it's basically when Vitality have the space they need, it becomes T-sided, and there's almost nothing you can do about it. Like if they have T-con and then they have pop, then that split is just impossible to defend. And Falcons even kind of showed the same thing because even Monacy coming out of pop late, I think they won a 3v5 right. in those Melbourne Grand Finals. And it's just too many good fights for the T's as they come out of what should be a tough choke point to breach, or at least in the old trains. If you just sent it out of these spaces with not much supporting utility, you had no chance. But it's because the outside yard is so dry in terms of positions that the CTs can stand. You're either standing at camera or icon, that area, and then that's getting smoked. And then the only other spot you really can stand is like around the bomb train. Like if you're around the bomb train, usually people just throw one back Molotov and like you're done. Like you have nowhere else to stand at that point. So I feel like it's just like not enough of a battlefield. It's more just like a flat plane, and it feels almost too rudimentary. Like they need to, it just feels so condensed. And because it's condensed, they just took out particular elements. And you don't really see too many people on top of the trains anymore because it's very awkward to get to the top of backs of the six train. You have to like go in front of it because you can't come up it from Ivy anymore.
Yes.
You have to go in front of it and expose yourself completely to T-con. And even if you get on top of that, it's not even a good angle because you can't really fall off anywhere. Because if you fall off, you're just still in the sight lines of the T's anyways. And then the only train that you can get on top of reasonably by yourself is that close red train. And it's not even really that powerful of an angle. It's a bit of an off angle, but I wouldn't even say it's like before. If you got on the outside yard trains in CSGO in the second iteration of it, you were in a pretty strong, powerful position. Like you're going to get one and fall off almost every single time. That doesn't really exist anymore for the map. And I feel like it lost a lot of, it just feels like you're playing a flat Valorant map when you're on that A bomb site. It really doesn't have the same sort of charms of verticality. And yeah, it kind of fucked with the verticality a bit too much in certain iterations of it, where it's like, which, like the Source Heaven, the CSGO Heaven, some of those positions almost felt too good. But now it's almost like you don't see defenders on the trains or any elevation at all, which I think strips away the soul of the map.
You know what's weird with this is that we haven't, and maybe this is because lack of data, but we haven't had any drastic changes to Train by Valve yet. Like, they did some like gap fixing, right? But they haven't changed the map since they've added it really at all. So that you've got to expect something coming, but they're the type of group who are going to wait till they have enough data before they do that. So yeah, it's due, though. I think a change could be nice.
By the way, on the other maps, I will just briefly address them. Like, one thing I'll say immediately is I'm so glad no one said the word Mirage, because bro, you know, that's like a popular thing where it's, for some reason, in the last few years, people have just done this thing where they go, Mirage needs to be removed. I always say to people, I actually don't think you're a fan of CS. I'm not even saying that to be a dick. Like, the problem is, I could understand if you're someone whose only obsession is like brand new smokes or some move that no one's ever seen. Yes, it's true. In that sense, it is, as every possible seeming combo played out on the map. But I find personally that map is still very enjoyable to watch. Like, if I'm doing a grand final mid in the modern day, being as Inferno is not as good actually in this economy, actually Mirage is the map I want to see all the top teams play, mate. That I actually thought it was awesome when the Na'Vi had that streak, and then Mouse and Vitality would try and compete with them, and then if G2 fucked around with Nico, they could win on it. Like, I actually think that map, you might argue about like how fresh is it, how much, but I'll tell you what, certain fundamentals of CS always work on it. Like, post plants are awesome. It's one of the best maps for doing like the fake on T side. By the way, you can also just do the pure, like, we're just going to this site on T side either way, from the palace, from the fucking, the apartments. Like, actually, it's got, here's the problem, it's got so much play in it as a map, it can never be the worst map, it can never be the map you have to remove. There's too many, the problem I have with that one is there's too many issues before I ever get to Mirage. Come on, there's too many other maps I'll be talking about. On the others one, and this is where I do have one quick other question though, which goes like this, right? Inferno, I actually think, I've thought about this a lot the whole time, the only problem Inferno has, in my opinion, is that the game is too T-sided. If you just didn't have as many saves, it would be a way better map. The problem is the saves is what kills it as a map. Like, that's the thing I think, like, the thing people don't ever want to see in CS is saves. And unfortunately, that's the ultimate map where you usually should save in a lot of the scenarios where they do. Like I'm not a big fan of saving in general, but I could make that an ugly point one day. Because I always point out, pros are so fucking bad at it. The amount of times they do the save chat. Yeah. So it's like, what I'm saying is, I'm giving up the round in exchange for the guns. And then they fight with the guns at the end of the round and lose the guns. It's like, that'll never make any sense to me. But I get that it's a really hard thing to coach. So to me, the Inferno's one of the rare maps where when they do the save, I'm usually like, that's actually the right save. Fair enough. It's not like the ones where they do the Dust 2 save, like at the beginning of the fucking round. It's like, they're going to find you. You've got like a minute on the clock or something. You're never going to get this save off. Like, so then lastly, the one last map, you referenced it earlier. I want to quickly, briefly touch on the Anubis one. Because the problem I have with Anubis is this, Chad. Right, I have a famous metric I invented for whether maps are good, which I do think still holds, because it goes like this. It goes, if you can't actually remember bona fide classics between top teams, it's not a good map. Because in my opinion, that is what made Vertigo the shittest map of all time. Like, you can think of an exciting map or a close one shot, but that no one in there, to me, I'm not even joking, to this day, I have never met anyone who ever said to me, genuinely, I think this matchup was like a truly great, you know, back and forth, tactical game. I think everyone just thinks Vertigo is just like, it was almost just like a fucking Joker map. It's like, you play it if you have to, who can survive it? Wow, it's just, we're hitting the sights. But no one ever thought it was like a brilliant map, right? I will say, I do think Ancient now has passed that test. It's had enough classics on it. It's had enough like truly good games. It's even got like proper dynamics you can play out, right? Here's the problem. I can't tell if this is the exception that proves the rule or if Anubis has actually made me a hypocrite, because I don't think Anubis has had many truly classic games. It's had good teams play on it, like when Liquid was getting good on that one map only, and then when Eternal Fighter came up and it was the map they could play on, and then obviously Vitality's also. So it has some good stuff, but the problem is, this just makes me think there was other things about Vertigo I also hated. Even though it might not have had a lot of classics, I actually enjoy watching Anubis, I can't lie. I actually do think the map has like some sort of a charm to it, even though it has some similar problems to Vertigo. Like, if you're the CTs, you are just sitting in bomb sites. If you want, you can just literally just sit two men in each bomb site and just go, okay, retake simulator, or like bomb site simulator, take simulator, which is actually the criticism everyone gave of Vertigo. I thought justifiably. So where do you actually sit on Anubis? Because my problem, like I say, is essentially, intellectually, I think it probably shouldn't be that good a map, but I actually sort of don't mind watching it. Actually, I find it has entertainment value.
I agree with Maui's sentiment from before about the fact that it's the only one in the pool that forces the CT's hand so much. I think that there is a change or two that could be made, because right now the territory that the CT's is fighting for is very vast. Like, if you're pushing up B main, it's hard to hold on to that part. It's not like banana or anything, right? And if you push out of A main, then you're in water. And after the util fades, like the T stairs smoke or whatever, you're a bit of a sitting duck. It's hard for the CTs to stay postured and hold on to that space. So if there was a change, I think the map developer, like the original guy, tweeted something out not that long ago saying he would remove rugs. But if you pushed out as a CT, you don't have to worry about dying from the back and above anymore.
There are too many flank angles if you push out in there. There's like a million angles people come behind you.
Yeah, because the aggression and the moves that are there, you can stick the landing. The problem is the T's go, well, I'll wait the fucking 20, maybe 40 seconds if you re-smoke, and then I'll still be able to get the map control. So I think that a change is necessary. But yeah, I agree with Maui's point. I think that having the map as the only map in the pool that forces that, if you can, like, this is classic with whenever we're talking about a game of CS, but if you can win the pistol, get the conversion, and win the first gun round, you can really start to set the tone on the CT side. And then you can get a pretty decent half. You know, you could get your 5 or 6 rounds, and that's not too bad at all. But I was trying to think if I remember any good game on that map, and like one that stands out as a classic. The only one that stands out is a stupid cast that we did back when it was still fucking MR15, when Anubis just entered the pool. It was FaZe versus Vitality.
FaZe Vitality at Pro League. Yeah.
And it went 14-1 first half, and I was casting with Harry and Hugo, and we came back from the break, and we were joking. Like, we came in full dead serious that it was going to be a comeback, that they were going to make this happen. And they ended up doing it, and then they won it in Vitality ended up winning it in overtime. So from that perspective, that's a bit more of a personal anecdote one, because if people go back and listen to
That one was crazy.
We came back full send from the break, like G-ing up the fact that they were going to come back. Just full jokes, but it stuck to Lanny. But yeah, I agree. I'd have to really go through the archive, and that's the problem. If I have to go through the archive to find games that stick out, then yeah. But I think the map does have like really good clutch potential and really multi-kill potential.
Yeah.
You see that from player, like from Spirit. I think another thing, teams don't play retake well enough on the CT side, like proper retake. Holding on to nades coming in from like B long and using the smoke to block off main, or, you know, having...
Well, the amount of times they just fight is crazy, bro. They just push in and start fighting people.
Yeah.
Stats in it.
I don't hate Anubis. I think I like it in there. It's good.
And by the way, I also noticed that another classic complaint when it got brought back a few years back was when they did Dust 2, everyone was like, it's not the same as Dust 2. Yeah, here's the thing though. Dust 2 always does have some sort of a dynamic that you enjoy watching though. It is CS. Like, that isn't one of those maps to me that, like, it's not just nostalgia. There are just fundamentals about that map that I think everyone does enjoy. Like, who doesn't enjoy watching, like, when it's going to be the 4-man A take and you're trying to watch the 2 CTs defend the angles? Like, there's certain things just always work on that map for me. It's not the best map. By the way, that's another map also will instantly get better if you don't do saves. If you just make it a little bit more CT sided as a game, you'll get way more player, you get way more, by the way, you'll get way more retakes. Like, I'll tell you the obvious example of what Dust 2 could be like is, if you remember the Cologne final last year, I think that Na'Vi game they played against Vitality was unbelievable, mate. They just kept doing like a million, like 2v3 retakes on the CT side, but it was insane to watch. It was incredible, like, because they had to make the perfect timing and they had to get the util and everything. Oh, it was mega. Like, that's what that map could be if you just didn't have as many saves. So I don't even think that's a problem map. I'm with you. You know what? You've actually talked me around to it, especially because you quickly did the old fucking Donald Trump or where you like started with the crazy take. Like, it's actually a good map. Like, fucking hell, buckle in. And then he's like, you know what? It's fine. It's like, oh, well, yeah, you know what? I'll meet you halfway, man. It's fine. It's fine. Nice. There you go. We'll meet you halfway. Right, Maui, what's your good point?
Yeah. So my good point is just that this is a conversation I was having with Launders for a little bit about the Vitality win streak, but it's nice that in CS2, with all the issues with Peeker's advantage, the game mechanics, people in the very beginning of it saying that anybody can beat anybody, well, there's a win streak now that proves that there's consistency. MR12 versus MR15 would also be factored into this debate. So as of the time of recording this, Vitality has tied the match win streak with Liquid. And it's Launder still wants the record to be pushed so that it can undoubtedly prove the game can be consistent. In my eyes, it's already been proven. Like, it's already been proven. The Mirage win streak that Na'Vi had, I think, on 12 maps, and then also the fact that Vitality is on this crazy, or this 24 map win streak or match win streak. I think those have already proven to me that 22, I guess, that we're playing a game now that, if you have the right assembly of a team, it doesn't really, it's not up to just like Peeker's advantage or just like unlucky fights or anything like that. Like, if you play good CS, you're going to be rewarded with it. I think this is a fight versus kind of layman arguments. I'll just regularly invoke his name. It's a fight against Loba. You know, it's just like it's just one of those where, you know, he's like anybody can beat anybody, and like people in the beginning of CS2, it did kind of feel like that, if I'm being honest. But the game has sharpened up to a point where the best teams are winning, and in a way they're almost in an era of their own now.
Okay.
I wouldn't have any pushback on that, because I don't think I was ever in the camp of like, it's random. I think like obviously when the game is going through its early stages, it's up for grabs on who can master the mechanics and stuff the quickest, which was Donk, right? But the overall approach to the game was still essentially going to be the same. Your biggest adjustment was how are you going to deal with the smokes, right? Like that's the biggest utility change and probably the biggest to strategic Counter-Strike since the introduction of CS2. And for me, when I look at Vitality, the reason the thing that I love the most is it feels like they've perfected the recipe for what's essential to be delivering you. I want to say the best available Counter-Strike at any given time, because they're not always playing their A game, right? I think that Melbourne final definitely wasn't their cleanest CS by any stretch. There was moments where they were caught sleeping and the comms looked poor, and there's been other moments throughout their run where it hasn't been the best. It'd be impossible for them to be playing 100% Counter-Strike every time. But what they've done is they have facilitated that by the five-man that you're talking about. They have a great set of players. But for me, it's the winning has allowed them to skip these events to make sure that they're coming into each stretch of event or event with the right focus and the right motivation. It's kind of worked perfectly for them, because you go into Melbourne, which if the Grand Slam wasn't on the line, wouldn't have had as big a stakes for them. So True. They wouldn't have been as hungry and as motivated, but they were. Then they come into Rivals, which is a studio event. But guess what? The streak is there to topple Liquids to then go down in the history books. The only other team would be NIP, and that's a conversation for another day. But there's another motivating factor. You get up today as Vitality, you get out of bed and you go, we're going to beat Liquid's fucking streak. You have an extra thing to motivate you, to lock you in. Whereas otherwise, this is just a studio event, right? What does this matter? Well, it matters because you have something to focus on. And then after this, for them, is Dallas. And Dallas is going to be the hardest one. If they're able to, if they stay undefeated here in Rivals and they go into Dallas and they're still trying to chase that dragon, that they're going to have to make up their own thing to motivate them at that point. And for me, it would be, let's go for 2 Grand Slams in a calendar year, because that's possible. They could win Dallas,
that would be epic,
Cologne,
like,
EPL, and Chengdu. And they could, that would be never have been done before. But yeah, like I agree with the consistency factor, Maui. Just look at, some of the shit teams. They're still bad, right? They're not getting these upset wins. Like, it goes both ways. I think there's a clear, hierarchy at the moment in top CS with, we've got Falcons who've joined the mix now alongside of Mouse and Spirit. We've got proper competitive scene right now. Not like we had, a couple months ago. Things are actually pretty set.
I do think, sadly, that as a general rule in games, normal people, right, normal people have quite a poor mathematical understanding. So whenever they say the word random, they just mean, I don't understand what's happening. They don't actually mean this pattern doesn't make any sense. Because here's what doesn't make any sense about that take, right? I'm a massive critic of CS2. Here's what my take would be. It's not at all random. It's less random. It's mega biased towards aggressive riflers on T-side. Like, actually, they're incredibly consistently good. Like, the joke is people like the Exertions of the world seem like 1.5 times the impact on the map. Like, but they didn't change anything about who they are. The game just rewards them more. If anything, like, my problem is quite consistently I hate that, like the shushes, the less skilled angle holders of the world just don't get the value out of it like they used to in old versions of CS. That's not random, you idiots. That's an incredibly consistent factor that in this case I think is based on like the economy's overtuned for T-side, the peaker's advantage, etc. The fact that you get sort of like a util tempo if you're on T-side where the CT doesn't know where he has to use it, so he has to buy more of it. So there's a million factors, but no, I think that's a weird angle. So what I would say is this. I actually think Launders has got a good take on this, not least because self-indulgent shout out, it's basically a rework of my take from CSGO, which is, if people don't know, this is a really old school one, obviously, because CSGO came out in 2012. When CSGO began and the NIP win streak, which at the time was the map streak, obviously not an actual like series streak, we were just counting the maps because he used to win every map back then. When that map win streak was going on, I can tell you it actually wasn't applauded. What happened was, maybe for the first half when people were noticing it was happening, people were like, wow, this team's really dominant. But actually it very quickly got hated on, and most famously Slasher, who at the time was like a big name journalist personality back then, infamously said he actually thought it was like killing CS that Nipple ever lost. Whereas I actually always had the opposite take, like this Lord as well. I always said, no, it's the other way around. Because everyone does think CSGO is some random shit game that has no quality to it, the idea that like truly great players from CS 1.6 can switch over and then consistently dominate. By the way, if you think of Get Right Forest, even in a similar playing style as how they used to fucking play 1.6, that's actually a really good selling point for the game. Even the joke is at the time, I didn't even like the game because it was so scoffed those early versions, but I tell you what, if one team consistently always wins, and by the way, their foil at the time, Very Games, was a really good tactical team with like a brilliant IGL from Source coming in a more similar game. So it even was almost set up like to prove that like there's something under the surface here. We're clearly getting to something. And eventually, obviously, that was a validated opinion. It became a fabulous game. Everyone knows it was only a couple of years later. CSGO started to hit. It's almost like its peak when everyone loved it and there was loads of play and all styles could come in. So I actually agree with that take. I do think if anyone wanted to still, I can't believe that's still a thing, by the way, like 2 years later. But if anyone's still on the like fuck CS2 entirely, like let's go back. I don't know what the let's go back is. Like, have you got a time machine? Like, that's not even possible. But the whole like let's go back to CSGO take, that can't be because Vitality's winning. Come on. Like, I agree with you. I think it actually validates the game. It actually, look, it might go like I said at the beginning, it might be because you say they've overloaded on skill, but I don't even think that's actually that good a point. Because here's the problem. I think there's teams that have had as much skill in their role. I think Mouse might have as much skill as Vitality. Yeah. The difference is it's the way they use the skill and the way the players interact. And those things aren't just about shooting people in the head. So you can't say that's just because the game's random or some. It's not even just the fact it's like T-sided. Like I said, like, mate, Vitality do some amazing things on CT side. What are you talking about? They could win. The joke is Vitality, you know, in the same way as Astralis used to like win T-sided nuke when it was a CT-sided map. Mate, I think Vitality could win a tournament just playing CT sides. Like they're so good. Like they're just they're built of a brick wall. They're the exception that proves the rule. It's T-sided. So no, I think it's totally fine. I think that's a good point. By the way, I've got a couple of quick other things to just say. One, since everyone knows the NIP one, I actually think the most, this is how it's interesting to me how people interpret graphics when they see them. Because you know when you see that famous win streak graphic that everyone's seen now, that HLTV, or maybe it was a betting site, I'm not sure, the one that's been posted with Nip on the 60 and then Liquid on the 23 or whatever. And then so we've been updating that as we go along. The most underrated part is this. It actually also does show you when you look at the teams that aren't there. Because obviously the first thing you all think is, how can Astralis not be up there? But this is what people miss. This is where there's different ways of dominating. So what's incredible about the NIP and the Vitality one is you are just dominating in a row. You never, it's like you said, Chad, you're never allowed to have a bad day. Like, by the way, that is actually, I think, the most underrated thing about this Vitality. The way I knew this team is just going to be unbeatable, I was pretty early on it, is because I was watching and I was like, mate, when they lose, the other team has to play 10 out of 10. And it's a barely a loss. But when they win, they just actually shit stomp you. And that still holds to this day, I'm telling you. Go and look, and you will almost never find a single map where anyone claps Vitality. But I'll tell you what, they not only in almost every series, at least one time, clap their opponent. But like I say, if you beat them, it has to be like 13-10 overtime. Like, it's the hardest wins of all time. So that tells me even their bad day, mate, is like an 8 out of 10. That is incredible. That's the part about that streak that's insane, because it basically means, like, we're sitting, you can never have the bad day. And by the way, a lot of these tournaments are single elim as well. It's not like we've got some super like generous format that means you don't lose. And so then I'll throw this last thing in there, but what it does imply though that people are missing is this. Here's what is insane about Astralis that nobody has matched up to yet is, bro, if you ever look on that graphic over the 2 years, 2018 and 2019, Astralis has four streaks like that. They're just smaller, right? That's insane. Because here's the thing, Chad. When you're on top in CS, you don't do it as much as this, but this is what you do. You dominate for your time, then you get knocked off and someone else takes over. The really insane thing I just want to highlight about Astralis is over those 4 years, they could lose events, but it's like being in a best of three that you always win in three maps. Bro, they would just win two out of every three events. Like, they could lose one, but the right next event, they'd be right back to number one. That's a different type of dominance, but that's incredible. So, by the way, that's one thing no one will ever match. Like, notice everyone else on that list, mate, has, like, Na'Vi has one, and then Liquid has one. Yeah, Astralis has four. Like, but even Vitality, you know what, mate? Once you complete this challenge, there's your next challenge. Let me see you get three or four of those motherfuckers up there. Because I tell you what, that is, I don't think anyone will ever match that, by the way. And also, Astralis did that in the prime of the game, mate. That is also, same as the Liquid one, I actually think, thankfully, now people are realizing how insane the Liquid one was. Bro, you can say Astralis wasn't at all the events. What, fucking Simple and Zero and all them chopped liver? They were right there trying to win the fucking game, dropping 40 bombs, and these motherfuckers still tore off 22 of them in a row. That is still the most insane streak in its own way for me. Right?
Yeah, I just looked this up. This is an insane stat.
Yeah, go for it.
That, okay, that in the 59 maps of this match win streak, so Vitality has won 84% of them. Only three map losses did they get only single digits. Only fucking three maps.
And he's making it generous that if they just get nine, he counts that. It was five, did he say? Yeah. Three. Oh, sorry, three out of like 50-something.
Three of 59 maps did they get single-digit rounds.
By the way, I can tell you right now, that is dominance on a level you will never see. Like, by the way, like, put it this way, I will say, Astralis was awesome, but they could also clap you. Put it this way, that NIP 87-0, they had a million 16-14s. And so, you know what I mean? There was loads of times it was close. That is insane, mate. That's probably the most underrated part of that streak, isn't it? It's mental.
The round win percentage is just absurd throughout.
And I said this on Twitter, but it's, I don't blame you guys. I do the same thing. Because in your brain, we're all used to MR15 scores. This is why I made this tweet. I said, bro, people miss how many times they win like 13-6. In an MR15 game, that's like winning like 16-8. Like, you're not, it's not even close, mate. You're just comfortably winning all these games. Like, you're at a canter. You're not like battling. In fact, I even think, by the way, this could be the hot take. That's actually the real hot take about Vitality. We don't really know that well how they were under pressure. They've only been in it twice, mate, ever. Like, it's like two times ever. And even then, it was like big finals, so the other team has pressure too. Right, let's go on. If we go now to my good point. It's actually going to be a really simple one, but I thought it was just a great one to bring up, which is that a lot of the discussion about Falcons was this weird thing before they got Modesty, where it's like, this is how you know people just sort of want, it's not even that they think Falcons are bad or can't be good, they want Falcons to be bad. Because, bro, one of the things, me and Maui had to push back with Kassad for this, mate. He was even trying to, like, hold the line, like the last possible line of defense, that even adding Monacy wouldn't just make them immediate contenders. People were doing, like, still need one more player, of course, which, like, look, if you're a meme, and that's funny. But I never got it myself, because it was like, mate, if I'm going back to the sort of lower idiots, it's just about shooting people. If we've proven one thing in this game, is that Nico and Monacy, you're already got a team right there, mate. Like, we could take those two, insert three people, and you'd have a chance in the best of three. Like, I didn't think they'd be in every final or whatever like this, and they'd be like number two immediately, Chad. But to me, it was quite obvious they were going to become an immediate contender and they could start cooking, especially after that PGL without Monacy. But you look now, my good point is Falcons are legitimately world beaters. Like, as far as I can tell, they're already in the mouse category, mate. The only team that can't beat is Vitality. And even then, they've come even close to almost beating Vitality. That was the first event. They basically had it almost in the bag. It was actually kind of like amazing cinema, by the way. The streak didn't end there, wasn't it? Like, it probably should have ended on that Nuke game. So if I look at it, like, everyone was complaining when this Vitality streak began, I'll tie it in, of like, yeah, but it's just a streak because, like, they have no one to contend with, do they? Like, Spirit needs a roster move, and then, you know, what's going on with Mouse with no IGL? What are you going to complain about now? Like, there's like three or four teams that legitimately, if you weren't Vitality, would be winning these events. Like, Falcons is right there. Like, by the way, they could even be number two right now for all we know. Like, maybe they'll improve at the end of this event. So what do you think? My good point, Falcons are world beaters.
I think what the interesting thing with this for me is, like, obviously Modesty, without a doubt, better player than Dagstar. But the issues with Falcons earlier in the year is, like, their floor, like, it felt like the fucking base.
Oh,
some
for
of the
sure.
games,
yes.
It didn't look like put together at all.
Yes.
So the addition of Modesty, obviously he levels the pedigree of player, the firepower, and the cohesion with Nico. Like, that's you know, he's bringing a lot there. But it feels like their floor, like, maybe Modesty came in and built like a fake floor or something that we haven't seen just yet. But it feels like the floor for the team has gotten a whole lot higher, which is the biggest issue, because the team before, you know, they could have momentum games. And they had Bucharest, which was a great result. But just with seeing Monacy in the server with them, maybe it's just a mentality shift as well. By having a player like that, it kind of emboldens the rest of them to just be much more confident. But yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Running into the major now, it's Spirit, Mouse, Vitality, and Falcons. They're the top four teams. And that's a real conversation.
But you're pretty healthy top four. I notice people have started to do this now. Look, Vitality's beating everyone, so it makes it always look lopsided. That's a pretty good four, though, mate. That's a pretty good four.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, the any given Sunday type of mentality of a major.
Yeah, yeah,
getting into
absolutely
one of these pressure games in an arena, and it just, those clutch rounds that normally go your way, Vitality stop going your way. Well,
yes.
Then, yeah, like, I think that the door is open for a conversation. So, yeah, I think the key with Falcons right now is, how do they bounce back after a tough loss? So, like, we're going to see them go up against Mouse today. Like, they could just win that series, but, you know, but, like, let's say that they lose that, and then we look at their next event. Are they in Astana? Are Falcons going to Astana? No, they're not. So the next one would be Dallas, I think. Yeah. Okay. So
that by the way, you can't catch a break. I'll even give them this, Chad. You can't catch a break if you're PGL. Your two PGL events, the one thing they've done is build up Falcons, and then they're not attending the third one, then they actually have the superstar. Give me a break. Like, I'm building this narrative, fucker. Like,
I think it's good for Falcons from the fact that they get a break to practice true. And then have Dallas. But for PGL, they're having a rough go.
See, when you're reigning champion, for fuck's sake, come on, at least come to the event.
I think next year will be much better for PGL. Like once teams, because you know teams. Well, I don't want to get too off fucking.
No. They'll figure here, some deal. Yeah, I know what you mean. They'll figure it out.
No, well, teams will make their plans and actually think about their events as a priority. True. Whereas this year they didn't do that, so it'll be different next year.
Yes. Right, Maui. Is there any other topic we need to reframe? Oh, no, you haven't done your point, actually. You haven't done your point on... Whatever.
Technically, I haven't. I mean, it's just brief. I mean, yeah, they are absolutely world contenders. I mean, they're for having 7 match points against Vitality on Nuke and then not getting it over the line, it almost felt like a bit of a shame. It would have been a great coming out party for Monacy on the team in Melbourne, but...
Even though people do that, because people love the problem is when you see it on paper like 12-6 late, yeah, obviously that looks unacceptable to lose. But if you ever watch how they lost it, mate, it was really fucking hard. Like Vitality was cooking on some of those rounds, mate, you know.
I'll be real. I mean, I watched the whole thing live, and then when we kind of went rethinking about it and looking back at it and seeing it was 12-6, it kind of didn't feel like 12-6 because I think it was like a money thing. Like, I don't think Falcons always had the most. Like, it was kind of like, and the way that Vitality brings it back to, in a weird way, you almost do feel like they, they had such a great defense that it doesn't feel like this is going to be for sure. They're just going to crumble on the next round or something like that. Also, some of the rounds that in the comeback for Vitality, they weren't even close, you know, Vitality, like it was like Tessus getting a few kills in a clutch and then falling at the last kill or something. But like, other than that, Vitality had pretty darn good defenses in those rounds. So it never felt like, oh, Falcons just choked this one round over and over and over again. It was mostly favorite advantages for
and
Vitality.
Mate, if you're going to say it like, nah, Falcons chalk, like, what are you supposed to do against that Zemu, like 1v3? Like, he essentially just played it perfectly. The guy on top of the silo is in perfect position. By the way, if I'm Falcons, I would run that back 100%, same exact position, just play it out again. That's you did that right. That would win any other team.
That's probably the one round that would be like the graffiti moment of that
game.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It was nuts, wasn't it? It was nuts.
Mm-hmm. I could just get into it. I feel like if we want to reframe things, why not go to Aura Frames? Because right now they have an excellent deal that you could get in on for Mother's Day. And this is basically just one of the best gifts you can give a loved one, even if it's not your mother. But at the same time, you can get $35 off using code SANDB, that is spelled SANDB. On their website, Aura Frames, which is AURAFrames.com. Again, promo code SNB. And yeah, this gift in general, I mean, this is something that my parents have right now where you're able to upload photos remotely. They can then see the photos on their Aura Frame, wherever they want to put it, in their living room, what have you. And something about it in terms of just like, am I really going to text them every photo of everything that I'm doing all the time? Or is it easier to just upload these photos so that you can almost, you know, slyly just say, hey, these are things that are happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really easy to use. It's a fun way to just like, you know, keep refreshing what they're seeing. And I'm sure that they're enjoying it. They have told me they've enjoyed it before. My parents have said that it's cool to have.
Oh, you have one, Chad.
Is this what you're talking about? Jason Moses O'Toole, he a couple years ago, he bought this as like a grouped gift for and Trace and Machine and everybody. Right. And
must be perfect.
Then we go.
By the way, that's the sort of thing. If you haven't given one, Duncan, you should give one to your mom or something, Chad. Like he says, it's a great way to like keep them updated on what you're doing and stuff, mate.
Yeah, I never thought of that because that's not a bad idea, Maui. That's actually a great thought. I might do that. Mother's Day's coming up.
It's just such a ubiquitous gift. I mean, I don't see any real reason why there's no downside of the gift. Yeah. So no. Yeah, use our code, guys. Support the show.
Yes. By the way, the code does also work in US, Canada, and UK, so it's mostly like the Anglosphere. Sadly, not Chad's area, but it's all right. It's all good.
That's fine.
But no, I actually do think, by the way, people think I'm saying this just because of the ad, Chad, but unironically, that is actually, in my opinion, the best use of it, is if we're all gamers and we're all just off in our own, like, selfish little world, if you just do this, like Maui says, you're not really going to, like, fucking WhatsApp your mum, like, your pictures every bloody day or every event, are you? But you could just do it this way, where as you're uploading to your Instagram, just upload your shit into that frame, and then they keep updating on what's going on in your life. And even better, even though you're just uploading to like a cloud, it's simple, they're going to think, oh wow, that's so thoughtful, he's keeping me updated on my life. And actually, they mistakenly will think you aren't just a narcissistic little gamer just thinking you get away with it all, guys.
Ah, shit. Yeah,
no,
I might need that in my life at this point.
You notice how my angle wasn't just become a good person. It was like, just trick him. Just trick him. I even thought when you were saying that, Maui, of an even more evil angle, which is, I hadn't even thought of this, but if you're a kid who's at college, you can also just gaslight your mum and put all fake pictures of yourself in the library and shit, and like go into like, you know, fucking student union. And stuff. Meanwhile, you're just out partying all the time. Like, and so, listen, you can also live a double life doing this, but, you know, I'd recommend do it legit. Okay.
To start a secret family, you know, upload.
I wasn't going that far. Okay. Okay, so right. It's now the modern 21st century solution to be the traveling salesman who has two families, Chad. He's like, no, it's all great. Yeah, good stuff. Okay. Right. Anyway, now that we've made that bad, let's go to the bad point. So, Chad, what is bad at the moment in CS?
I can keep this one real simple and short. 8-team studio event, 6 teams make it to the playoffs. Dog shit Blast Rivals format.
Here's what's weird, mate. I'll give you a quick update. Okay. When I said on Twitter something similar, because when I looked at the event, by the way, I was thinking similar to you, Chad. I was thinking in light of the fact Vitality's probably going to complete this win streak here. This is like an epic win. I'm looking at the event and I'm like, but wait a minute. Blast, when they did the open, it's awesome now. It's like exactly what I wanted. It's like all the best teams. And then I look at this one and it's like, isn't it basically just 4 good teams and then you've just forced like the regions in, like, just it has to be this person from NA and then this one. And then it's like, so we're just doing a weird region, like limits the top. And Messi also said on Twitter that the original format was actually just going to be top 8 teams in the world. Bro, that would have been amazing. Look, I don't know what's coming in between it to stop that, but that could have been awesome. It was just the best 8 teams at that time get invited. But I'm with you. I don't get it, mate. What's the, what do you think of this, man? It's kind of like, it does undercut the event a bit.
Yeah, the obvious disclaimer is that I'm literally working the event right now, but I feel like I'll just gaslight you guys. Hey, didn't we get the 4 best teams in the world in the
that is true. Like, that is true.
What are you mad about? Stop complaining, you know, to watch watch the Counter-Strike and shut up. No, it's just
guaranteed good semis. Yeah, exactly.
Messioso's right. I mean, it was supposed to be, well, I actually think at some iteration of it, it was just supposed to be these wild card invites were supposed to be the best team from the North America VRS, the best team from the Asia VRS, and the best team from the Europe VRS, which in turn would probably be Mongols, Liquid, and whoever's fifth, right? I guess is FaZe actually the wild card right now? So it was going to be...
Falcons, the wild card, I think.
Oh, right. Could be missed on when the invites went out, maybe.
FaZe were in the top 4 because Mongols turned down. But yeah, it's something along those lines.
Right.
Because the invites have been on a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and if you think of it like that, then it was probably going to be 5 of the... Well, it would be the 5 best teams in the world. Arguably 7 of the top 8 teams, because I think maybe Liquid's not in that top 8, depending on how you want to rank teams today. But that's what it was supposed to be. I feel like the other thing is that, reminder, this was supposed to be in Mexico. In an arena or like actually, I think it was supposed to be like a kind of a smaller arena, but not, it wasn't going to be like a stadium, but it was going to be like 1,000 capacity or something like that. That had to move. I don't really, there's different rumblings of why it moved, I don't think it had I don't think there was a huge enough interest in purchasing. I don't think there's a huge...
For teams was a problem as well as...
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like a multifaceted issue.
Yeah, so there were a few things that worked against it being in Mexico. So I think another thing, just from what we just kind of revealed there as a small detail, is that if you're in a region like Mexico, you're a Counter-Strike fan, and you have the means to go to an event like this, you should buy the ticket.
Oh, for sure. It'll give them way better chance that happens again. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. I know some people... So that's another... I mean, if it worked out as it was supposed to work, then it would have been great, in my opinion, because new region, top 8 teams in the world, roughly the top 8 teams in the world, in a, you know, with a crowd, I don't think people would have complained at all.
That's a fair point.
What was their old events called? Not like Blast Premier, but before that. Like, this is that in disguise, though. This is what
Blast Pro Series.
That's the one.
Yes.
Because they're trying to guarantee. So it's a good and a bad thing at the same time. They're trying to guarantee as many teams to play arena games as possible. Yeah. Now, obviously, they're not in the arena anymore. But you have an 8-team format, right? So why do we have a 6-team playoff bracket if we have an 8-team fucking format? Like, that's stupid. That in itself is bad. And then the next part of it is Blast were given exemptions by Valve to even be able to run this format in the first place. Why are they allowed to run an event that only has 8 teams? Like, that's
a bit weird.
The VRS is meant to have as many, like, well, not as many. It's meant to try and facilitate the ability to get these points to move up and down the ladder and everything like that. And Blast are running something that's like, it's like, okay, we want all the best teams so that we can get the most viewership. It's like, we're meant to be moving away from that. The best teams are merit-based off the fucking ranking. That's the way this works, right? I don't like the fact that they've gotten away with this. And like, it's great the way Maui said, yeah, we've got the best 4 teams. We're going to have great games. Like, I was going to do stuff on the weekend I didn't watch fucking Wildcards versus Spirit last night.
Sure.
I don't give a fuck about that game. But I'll tune in.
Oh, you missed out.
I'm sure. I saw something on Reddit with Pimp, you know, down in a bottle of water or some shit, whatever the fuck that was. I was like, the game must have been a banger. But Falcons, Maui's, Vitality, Spirit, and then the grand final. Yeah, that's sick. I'm tuning in for that. I'm there. And there every day of the week. But I just think that the format overall and the fact that they've been given this exemption and all that, it's just bad. It shouldn't exist in 2026 and onwards. They should be forced into doing more of a comprehensive format, because this is shit.
I don't know how they got the exemption. I know that it's in the Valve tier of wild card. That's not talking about the team's name, but they got some exemption
the
Rivals events are not like the usual tier one. It's like a wild card tier. I don't really understand that at all, if I'm being honest.
But you were meant to have run 3 tier 1 events to get an exemption like that, I'm pretty sure. And they won't have done that. They've only run Showdown and Open.
Yes.
I think that's how the exemption, like, that's why they got the exemption, because they weren't filling that quota. I think someone tried to make the argument that they were running a qualifier in like a country for the Rising, whatever the fuck it was. But I don't think that doesn't sit pretty with me. It's remnants of the partnership that we're meant to be moving away from, getting an opportunity. Mm. I think Valve are going, run this. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the feedback's like. We'll see how it impacts the rankings, because Valve are just in like data territory at the moment with the VRS, right? So like, from that standpoint, I hope that they see it's fucking dumb. And then, you know, they don't give exemptions like that in the future, because it's going against what I think we're meant to be moving into.
I was even polite there by just actually telling you the real name, Chad, which it was originally called Blast Pro Series before it was called Blast Premier. I didn't even use what I think's the hilarious, iconic one I came up with on By the Numbers. I used to call it Blast of Ones. By the way, spoiler, you guys don't appreciate enough if you're a fan. You don't know how actually mad it made Astralis that I called them Blastralis, or how mad Blast were that I called their event Blast of Ones. Because the problem is, if that shit ever catches on with like forum plebs, you just cooked, mate. Like, that'll outlive even its reality. Like, it's why I've actually tried so hard this year, Maui, to actually point out that like, that Blast Open Spring one was a fucking mega. It's basically the old ESL format. Like, look, there are flaws with that. Like, it's single and lame. It's true. You can occasionally, because of an upset in the groups, get a team that goes to the playoffs from like the upper bracket too easily. But I'll tell you what, if you understand the nightmare logistics of running events, I can accept those compromises if you look at what it gives you. I've always thought that format is a banger, by the way. It was from way back in the day when I used to do the ESL events with Chad, but I always thought it was a great format. And also, it works really well as a standardized format, by the way. When everyone knows how that works, you always know where you are in the there's no time breaker. It's got so many upsides. By the way, I actually legitimately think from that Blast event, the Open Spring, that's as good as any event in CS. Like, that's one way, if Kassad tells me it's a banana cup, I'll tell him, shut the fuck up. No, it isn't. Like, now it's actually a real tournament, mate, with all the best teams. I know what you mean. This one right here looks way more like the bad Blasts that people didn't like in the partner circuit, where you'd have like MIBR, the shit one back in the day, and like EG, and you just look at it. It's the same thing, mate. You'd look like you're saying and just go, well, first of all, the group stage format means it's almost impossible not to make the playoffs. So I guess I'll just tune in on the semis. That's, I used to actually feel like that after time. Unless there's a very specific matchup. Like, who gives a fuck about OG playing against like some team that's going to beat them in the round of 6, which is what we used to have for like 2 years. So, no, I'm with you on that. I also do think as well. Oh, sorry. Go on. You want to jump in?
No, I just think that it's going to be like the Blast Opens are weirdly... If I were to think about the competitiveness of a format for Blast, it usually was the fault. Like, I think the way HLTV in, say, like their top 20 would consider... elite events, the spring finals or the fall finals, spring finals, and world finals were kind of higher on their list of what they mattered okay. more. I'm kind of unsure how people are going to take the rivals and like how much it matters in the final rankings of sure. the year, like team of the year, everything like that, because obviously it's almost like the rivals got lucky this time that the Vitality streak is alive, because it gives this sure. overarching yes. narrative for the entire tournament.
No, I know what you mean. Put it this way. If you went the other way and this was the event where Vitality lost, I think it wouldn't mean as much a fortune to the team that wins. Like, if Falcons wins this one, no one's really going to say, ah, oh, Falcons number one. They're going to go, ah, oh, whatever. The streak had to end eventually. They got them on the less important event. It's the one that isn't on the giant stadium. You know, I think they would argue that angle. No, when you actually look at this format, you can actually even argue, by the way, like, maybe it could have been better, because actually, I assume when that invite went out, like, if FaZe got that in, or Falcons or whatever, like, it sort of worked out that Falcons got the invite then, if that's true that yeah. they were. Because, mate, if that was like FaZe was one of your top teams, and then that invite is like, look, I'm not hating on them, they're good teams. Like, even Mongols wouldn't be as excited there. I'd be pretty whack, right? If that was like FaZe and Mongols here, like, then the event's just Vitality and Mouse, isn't it? Like,
that I think that's how it would have been.
Right.
Because Mongols were top four globally. Right. So they would have received one of the top four invites. I think they turned it right. down. Then it went to FaZe, which then opened the door for Falcons to be the right. EU next highest for the wildcard slot. So they did get fortunate with that, for sure.
And by the way, what I'll say is this. I don't mind having teams like Wildcard and FlyQuest in tournaments, but they have to be the tournaments that are at least 12 teams. You know what I mean? They can be the lesser teams that battle and try and get the... But the problem with this one here was...
The also, too big.
Yeah, that's the problem, mate. Right now, the top four is too good. So the idea that you could... Look, that's actually a point later on, so we won't go too deep on it. But the problem here is there's never... Like, I didn't even think FlyQuest was going to beat FaZe. Never mind beat fucking Spirit and Falcons. Like, that's not even in my brain. And it's not like FlyQuest... By the way, I even picked FlyQuest intentionally there, Chad, not to donk on them, because they actually have been way better the last month or two. Like, if yeah. you watch, they play a lot of close games against like the mid tier now. The problem is this event doesn't give you even a chance to do that. Like, you just have to play the absolute best teams who are definitely going to cook you. That's just obvious at this point. Right. Yeah. If we go on, Maui, what is your bad point?
My bad point is pretty simple. It's keeping the good fight of who needs to be number one on the Fraud Watch.
Okay.
It's that, you know, we have these top four teams, and I think that they all have really great aspects, but the guy is sticking out like a sore thumb. And yes, he did just have one good series versus Spirit, but I'm not forgetting the entire year and a half that he just played is Majisk. Okay, I think Majisk is pretty outright the worst player on any of these top four teams. And the way that he has lost rounds for Falcons, the way, I mean, he just botches these moments, and it doesn't feel like he really, like, the only thing I could say in counter to this is that he brings good vibes, and that's just what I care about probably the least when I already have Nico and Monacy and Zonic. So if that's your biggest contribution lately to a roster, I feel like it's not substantial. So I'm just saying that even though Majisk, as of the time of recording this, had one a singular good series versus Spirit, everything else he has done for the last year has gone weirdly under... It's gone unnoticed because Falcons were bad. And now that Falcons are good, he's still bad. Okay, so that's my biggest concern with him. Thinking most recently to him playing against, I think it was Vitality. If people remember, like, this game was pretty much cooked for Falcons, but Majisk actually had this one archside flank where he got behind all of the players of Vitality. And then he just whiffed a spray on Zywu, and then they just killed him, and then they went Vitality went for a retake that they otherwise didn't even want to go for, but it's just that they got baited in because Majisk fucked it up so badly. So I would just say that Majisk has fallen off pretty hard over the last 12 months. If you use almost any filters at all, it just looks he's in my eyes the one guy that, if you look at the top teams, like, you have Rops and Mezzi as great anchors. I think even Zontix and Magix have shown a lot of value lately. Bit has been just obviously fantastic, one of the best anchors in the space. Yimpat's a guy that we're always talking about too. Other than really IGLs, he might even literally be worse than some of the IGLs on these teams as an individual sure. player. Like, the only people of the top four teams that he's maybe certainly better than is... I don't even want to say it. Like, is he better than Brolin? Like, I don't even know if I actually think he's a better player than Brolin today.
But this way, Apex is better than him right now. That's not even an unfair statement, right?
Kicksand's better than him.
Yeah,
Kicksand's a better player than him.
Why not?
That's what's crazy about it. Like I would look at, he's not even the best anchor on his team right now because Kicksand has put up better multi-frags in arguably harder positions sometimes. So that, yeah, he's just sticking out like a sore thumb. And I feel like this is what's bad about this point isn't just dunking on Majisk. It's that you almost know that Falcons is going to buy some other anchor if he continues to be bad and just fuck up another team because of this. So it's almost like the reverberations of him being bad is like, can't we just have, like, it's almost like the rumblings, I feel like, have to be soon enough. Like, we're going to get, when's the overdrive leak? Where's the KRL leak that somebody is targeted by Falcons to replace Majisk? And then we're in limbo once again. And what right now is a really cool top four that we have, but then it's just going to, imagine it's just like Falcons targets bit. It's just gonna blow the scene up again. So I'm mad at Majisk for his play and how Falcons is probably gonna respond to him, his bad play.
So of the top four teams right now, do you think he's the weakest player?
If I go for the power ranking top four teams of Vitality, Spirit, and Falcons, he's simply the worst player.
Because it got me looking at his age, right? So this is like four-time major winner, major MVP, and then I look at his age, and I'm like 27. I'm reflecting where the fuck did the time go, but okay, so he's not out of range yet of being able to contribute. So then I ask the questions of, now that the team has some stability to it, I'm trying to make any case I can here. I go back to Astralis when he was part of it. That's was a system-based team with individuals with high output. Okay, so now he's in a new... The roster's had a lot of changes, right? He was the piece coming into this year that was seen as like the last redeemable one. So he got to hang around. Then they bring in another core. They've changed Norper again. His type of a role and position is going to be based a lot off knowing how his teammates react in certain situations so he can compliment them, because he's not going to put himself like front and center star of the show in these roles. But the one that is undeniable and difficult to even push back on is if he is in these anchor positions and they come his way, if he's not getting one and traded or one and delay, then he's not doing his job, right? And that's that right there is the hard part to push back on at the moment with him in the server. So I don't know. I guess I'll ask you the question, Matt. Do you think he can turn it around in time for the major when he gets more comfortable with the roster he has right now? Or do you think he's mega just fucking, he's cooked?
If you just look at the immediately recent sample of one series, he turned it around for one series. Some of that was actually, though, based off of T-side play. So I'm not... His CT side ability just feels a lot weaker than it was before. If I see him locked in on a bomb site, I'm not seeing that delay style or really the get a kill style. Sometimes it's just getting flat out run over. I don't think that he dodges utility as good as some of the other anchors right now. Like, even watching, you know, like Magix was such a masterclass at the grand finals of Shanghai, how he practically just dodged every flash, every nade coming his way, and then was able to get multi kills. His phase was trying to run into his A bomb site. I think Majisk is just eating shit a lot more than other people that I'm seeing in these positions. So yes, there's ways to get better. Use code Maui Snake at Refrag. No, I mean, like, there's like, no, yeah, like, yes, you can improve. I feel like that's kind of how people, like, if I have to guess, you know, people like Yimpat, people like Bit are probably grinding these like anti execs in the same vein as people used to play execute servers. It was, you kind of see how the nades are flying at you just so that you can learn when, what the timings are to dodge. And especially with how modernized Refrag is, that you can load up the opposing team's execute against you, play against that execute, and then see what you're able to accomplish. Like, he should be able to get better, but it's been a long time of him looking even remotely good. So yeah, I mean, the chance he turns it around, again, it's a fraud watch, not calling him a fraud.
Okay.
So there is a percentage chance that he can turn it around.
Maui, the problem you have when you say that, mate, is even though I know what you mean, nobody who's being put on the fraud watch will accept your terms. Like, no, I'm just examining. Put it this way, let me give you a little food for the thought. Imagine if what you were saying was, this is going to be a whore watch. And you're like, now I'm not saying you're a whore. I'm just saying you're a candidate to be a whore, and we will now examine whether you quite become a whore or not. I imagine, Maui, whether you said they were a whore or not at the end, they might get offended by that, believe it or not. So, you know, I think my reframe helps people understand why sadly, to them, Moe, you are saying they're a fraud. To the player and the fan, they're going to think you're saying he's a fraud. I'm sorry. It's why everyone did actually overreact. Like, technically, I'll even say this, because I know people are wrong on this. I've looked it up. People told me that Richard said Zonic is a fraud. No, no. He said, like, he's on fraud watch like you, and then he meant he was a fraud in Falcons. He didn't mean what the pleb on forums do, which is like, oh, my God, you mean secretly the whole time Zonic never did anything in the Astralis and Vitality? That take is the most crazy out there take I've ever heard. But, no, no, it's true. The fraud watch thing, the word watch is doing a lot of load bearing there, and I'm not sure everyone I think once they hear fraud, they don't hear the second word.
Let's tone it down a little bit. Majisk's future on Falcons, in my eyes, based off of recent performance, actually a year-long worth of performance, is dubious, and the implications of him having a dubious future on Falcons leads to potential shifts in other top teams as Falcons acquire players who would be more suitable to play his role.
They don't remember you saying that. You just said fraud earlier on. So you said he's a fraud.
It's not fun.
Right, Chad, what do you think on this topic? Obviously, listen, by the way, Chad, I understand whenever on these shows we bring up these topics, Magisk, Snacks, Fallen, these... Listen, when I call them CS royalty, I don't even just mean it to denigrate them. They are CS royalty. These were the greatest players of all time that in a sane world, we hope never have these years where it looks bad or you've got... But we have to be real. So what do you think of the Magisk? What's your angle on this?
Well, I'd agree with the sentiment that Falcons will be aggressive enough that they'd replace him come the tournament break if his performances don't get better. Right? Like that I think would be fair considering what they're trying to achieve. And right now him looking like the weakest link, like Testus delivered huge in Melbourne. I think Kixon at the moment, right, just the way that he's calling and his output individually, like it's top class. So yeah, then you would look towards Magisk as the piece to replace. And I think that, you know, it's funny when I had, what was his name? Fuck, I forgot it. The guy from G2 on the HTV confirmed.
Oh, the Alan Dillard, whatever, the CEO. Yeah.
Yeah. Still guy. Yeah, he's a June fan, apparently.
Even though, by the way, I'll give you it now for free before I forget, Chad. I'll always do this. It'll always be who Thorin is. Alias Stilgar, unable somehow to recognise generational all-universe talents like Monacy and Nico. Mate, you haven't even fucking fulfilled the law. Anyway, whatever, keep going.
You didn't even do the
Elisad Al-Gaib. He looked at Nico and went, we've got plenty more Nikos. Bring in another Nico. Like, that's Paul Atreides, you mad fuck. Anyway, whatever. It's all good. Not triggered by that at all. Don't worry.
I think that he said that Ilya wouldn't help them, like, I guess, reach out to players to help build the team. I think Ilya would gladly do that at the moment in this Falcons roster a bit. Because like that, like if Na'Vi keep going on the downward trend and they can get bid across, like you're making that trade, 100%. So I would agree. If he doesn't start, you know, contributing more within the games, then his head's definitely on the chopping block come the tournament break. That's a fair surmise for sure.
By the way, being as obviously we have a famous example of that recently that everyone loves to reference, where supposedly Zemu called Rops and did the same thing. Bro, Maui, how are people this far off the pace? Like, that's been a thing in basketball, by the way, for like 30 years, where you get the star player to do the call. Because obviously, if like some actual all NBA player messages you, hey man, I'd love to team up with you, that's different from like an offer, like, you know, a contract offer. Like, same thing, and same as the Zemu one, right? That's a different call, mate. If that calls the Vitality guy contacting the Na'Vi GM, like, hey, is there any possibility for a trade? If that's fucking Monacy, like, hey, bit, oh, it'd be really great if we played together and won all the championships together. Like, no, that's a different call. We all know it is. Yeah. That call goes through different. That hits differently. It's like the difference if you work in media. You might appreciate this, Chad. It's very different if you say to a player, want to come on my podcast? They go, sure, I'll reach out to the org. I'll arrange it and they'll be there on Tuesday. If they go, you can email my PR guy, that means they don't want to come on me. You know what I mean? Like, it's very different when they send the email, when you fucking send it, and then you like you just get that like out of the office thing, like, fucking hell. And then it's just like a way to fob you off, isn't it? So just how it goes.
I got a new strategy with that. When I ask them and they say, yeah, I just need to check with my manager, I'll go, no, it's all right. I'll check with your manager, right? Because the manager's going to go, all right, yeah, like, can we get him in a jersey? Or were they in front of a camera? They don't mind it sometimes. So you call their bluff on that. You see them stick the landing a few times.
Okay. Right, by the way, on the Magisk topic, the real problem with this is, it's why the whole fraud watch thing always hits people so hard. What you have to do, which Maui did at the end there, which was well done, is you have to reframe that the Falcons of today isn't not only it's not only different from the Falcons of Dexter, it's definitely different to last year's lineup. So the real problem, if you're Magisk, is this. I think in last year's lineup, the only players that were actually acceptable were in this order. Sun Pius, I actually thought was underrated. I think people just missed that open numbers went down. He was actually fine generally. And then the other one was Magus. And he, and by the way, it was in the context that the rest of that lineup was terrible and they used to lose every game. So what you would look at is if you looked at it and you were like, look, I can't kick everyone, so I'd probably keep these two. Like, essentially, I'd give Magus a chance to reclaim himself. That's what I'm saying last year. The problem is I don't think he's done it this year. Like, first of all, I already thought he was a little bit sus when they had the Dexter roster, because essentially, obviously, Modesty is giving you more impact than Dexter and way bigger production. So I think he's been masked a little bit. But I don't think he's even been masked, because his problem now is a different problem. Now, as I just said in my point, Falcons is now contending for titles, mate. So unfortunately, when I think of that fucking Melbourne final, you're one of the first people I'm going to think of. Because I'm going to think, bro, you could have won that final for them. And I don't look at Nico Modesty, why didn't you do it? No, it's like, mate, all I needed was like one more map of good play. And I could have had, we could have had a win, or one CT side like Maui's saying, and we win the match, you know?
I think he's in a good spot though, because like because the team now is showing that they can fight against the best. The ramp in to the major, which like let's say that they win the major,
okay.
Well, job done. He's staying, right? Like unless he fucking bots out Giga Hard and they have to carry him across the finish line, right? Like he has the perfect moment now to ramp. They get this event where, okay, let's say you lose to Mouse today, or you make it to the final, you lose again. It doesn't matter. That's still early. You still haven't even fucking practiced yet.
You went
straight into Australia with a day and a half. You went straight here to Copenhagen. Then after this, you get some time. You go to Dallas. The field's tough there again. You make another deep run. Okay, now we're primed, ready for the major, and he performs above the standard he's right now. He can save himself in time. Like it's still doable.
The only thing is, though, here's my problem. This is one of those areas where I hate that people just own. They never get past the numbers. They're all trapped in the fucking numbers, mate. My reason to critique Magus has nothing to do with a HLTV rating or a map score. Here's the problem. It doesn't even check out the eye test. I always told people, Magus himself, you remember this, Maui, you were on the shows. Magus was one of my famous players at the end of CSGO, along with James, that I always thought the rating never accurately showed. I always thought James' stats looked inflated by the way the rating worked because of saving, etc. And I always thought Magus' stats were too low. You would watch him play in Vitality and you'd be like, bro, this guy control a T-side. Like, he did almost look like a secondary caller or something. Like, his reads in the game would be brilliant. We'd find you. Like, first of all, I just don't see that in the game when I watch in CS2. And in theory, in CS2, I think this guy could be fucking sick if he had the same skill set. And then I agree, on CT-side, he is levels below his Astralis tiers, mate. Remember, in Astralis, this was the guy where, if you go to his site, he's going to make a highlight clip. He's going to get, like, a 4K and just... And by the way, it goes without saying, when you had the fucking org, this guy was unbeatable. Like, you couldn't do shit to this guy. So you don't see that now. You go to his site, he can get a kill, he can get a... He's not terrible, but he's nowhere near like that. That, by the way, CT side was what he made his name off in CSGO. This guy was a fucking demon anchor, of course. You think of maps like Inferno, Overpass, he owned those maps, bro. Do you know how many people have lost those maps to Astralis? And it's not they're going, oh, bloody device. It's like, you can't get into Magus' site, mate. If you go there, he's a lockdown. And then eventually, once the other team realise we're never going there now, well, that's just too obvious what we're doing. So sadly, that player doesn't exist in CS2 for me right now. Like, and I do think I agree with the other part. His real problem that fucks him is this. If he was in G2 or past years of Vitality, he'd get to get away with this because they'd have the Nico Modesty factor would mean that's what you'd look at. You'd go, hey, we can still win. We're still contending. The problem is he's on Falcons, and Falcons are absolutely, this is, I actually think, the real way smart of Nico Modesty to go there. You're not going to have to be the one who begs the org to change. They're going to change if they don't win. That's actually, people still haven't reframed that. If you're a top player, that's a really good position to be in. You don't ever have to be the bad guy, by the way. You don't have to be the guy doing the Steam message to the other people when you lose the game. You know that your org and your coach, by the way, it even applies to Zonic. This is where people are so short-sighted. You think if they make a super team and get Bit or Yimfat and then Zonic doesn't win anything, they're going to keep Zonic. They'll kick Zonic too, mate. Then they'll bring in whoever you want. That's the point. They'll just go get him. And by the way, I'm absolutely with you. Even though they can win now, the obvious angle is, look, Yimfat, no one knows if he can even be signed now because if he signed with Mouse, so who the fuck knows? Maybe he doesn't want to leave. But the Bit one's the obvious one. If Na'Vi keeps struggling, people know Bit and fucking Modesty are friends. I mean, Bit, by the way, sort of even put himself out there by being in those like photos with him after the whole war thing. I know that was not popular, I can tell you, with Ukrainians, by the way. Like, they were giving him some stick for that and they were hating on him. So if he really is on something of like, I'm actually like real friends with Modesty, I'd love to play him again. I mean, you don't say no to that. I don't care. Even if you win the major, mate, if that team moves there, you do it. You know what I mean? Because that's how you win the next major too. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you. I think that's a good one. I do also think as well, one last thing to say would be this, is I do think that another problem you have is, I think I want to get, here's the last thing. I want to throw it back to you and see what you think of this. I also think a problem you have is actually the same problem Sonic has. I actually think that's also why Magus is going to get way more scrutiny now they're a top team. Because believe it or not, I actually think one of Sonic's biggest failures was when he would do interviews and post-game interviews and any PR, he would talk as if he in his mind still thought he was like in Astralis. You know what I mean? Like as if like I'm still on top of the game, and if you criticize me, I can push back and I can say you're wrong. Whereas the problem is, I know it sounds fucked up, but when you're losing, or they're not losing that much now, but you're playing badly in this case, in Magus' case, fans actually want you for real to almost grovel. They want you to be like, I know I'm bad, I'm so sorry guys, I'm going to do better, this isn't acceptable. And here's the problem, Magus is a bit like Sonic in that sense, he's a bit proud. Like, he's not the guy who's going to do that, by the way. Like, he'll say the team played badly or he messed up, but he's not the guy who's going to be like, by the way, I'll even give it up to people like Yekinda. They were quite honest about the fact they knew they were struggling. Like, they got that it was looking shit. And I'll tell you what, that fans will give you goodwill if you sort of agree with them. Like, yeah, I am a bit shit now. If you do it like Magus, where you seem like you're proud, that'll make them think you're never going to improve, unfortunately. So I think also, he's good. It's good. Put it this way, I don't think he's there for long. I think it's a couple of months. I think win or lose, they're just going to replace him. But I also think that's the nature of Falcons. I don't think it's just about Magus, by the way. Like, the obvious joke is, the second they replace Magus can bring in bit, I'll tell you who else then immediately has to start fucking watching it. It's then Kicksand in it. Then it's like, right, now they're, they're going to go and get LXEP or something. You know what I mean? It'll be some bad move like that, won't it? You know what I mean? So it's true. That's just going to be the nature of Falcons. Right, we can move on. My bad point is going to be a really out of left field one for you, but I actually think it should tie into what we've discussed so far. So listen to how I framed this, Chad. So I'm going to make it very simple. I'm not going to do a big thing. We'll go back and forth. We'll see what you guys think. My bad point is that I think the arrival of Falcons and the fact that we have this really strong top four of Vitality, Mouse, Spirit, Falcons means that if you are Aurora, Ex-Eternal Fire, or Mongols, bad news, guys, your window closed. Like, you had a very real window this whole year where if you... By the way, I kept waiting for it to happen. Like, that's why I don't give up on these teams. Because I know what it's like, Chad, when people have, like, slight issues online, etc. If you ever fix that, both these teams could immediately have won tournaments. They could have been in way more finals. But not only have they had the little slip-ups anyway before these teams came online, mate, they are in trouble now. Like, if those two teams still have stage problems, those four are going to get past you every time. And if those four are in the semi-finals... It's going to get kind of a bummer because in the first half of this year, there's a world where absolutely Aurora and Mongols could have been in a bunch of finals, mate. Like I said, they could have even fucked around and won an event. They could have won a PGL event or something like that, you know? So, and I feel like your window to actually be like true top five has now closed, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just talking to Yanko about this the other day, and his angle was... he thinks that we were like gaslighting ourselves into thinking these teams were good. And I pushed back on it. I said, like, for the field and the way the field was at the time, they were good.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have Falcons playing this level of Counter-Strike, right? We hadn't fully fleshed out at that point how competitive Mouse were going to be. I think Aurora and
bro, Eternal Fire's beating almost everyone. Like, what are they talking about? They're pretty legit.
Yeah, and obviously the biggest issue was the stage games, right? But even still, just playoff games in general, it didn't hit
true.
As hard, right? And I couldn't agree with your sentiment anymore, right? Because right now, the gauntlet to get there is more difficult because the class of teams around you has risen. So your door to break through is no longer like, wow, look, Eternal Fire and Mongols, they're doing it. It's... Well, you're meant to be one of the best Counter-Strike teams in the world, so we're expecting you to get there.
Yes.
And we also, everyone's sitting here tapping their watch going, when are these guys going to stop shitting the bed, if ever, right? Because that's something that's so hard to quantify.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't know when they're going to turn that corner. We talked about the Danish TSM for years before they ever turned that corner, right? And what we're witnessing right now is either going to be the making or the breaking of these teams. Mongo is going to go back to the LAN cafes and pick up some players to replace who? Because, like, Senzu's the guy who disappears in the big games. Right, but he's
supposed to be your best player in theory. Otherwise. Yeah, true.
Right, and then you look at Aurora and you go, well, okay, Wakadi and Jota, like they're actually sick, like, but they just need more time. But time is not what the likes of Zantara and Woxic have.
Yes.
So you've got this. It's almost like a win now mentality that Aurora have to have. So yeah, their train is fucking going. It's leaving the station for sure. Like that, I can't. They would have to play, like. The best Counter-Strike they've literally ever played to win any event for the remainder of the season. I just don't see that happening. Like everybody else is now settled in. They've got used to their roster changes. Everything's good. Like everybody else is ready to go. Well, not everybody, but the top four above them.
Sure.
I still think they can take it to like a Na'Vi or whatever in a group stage game for sure. Like I still think I'd pick them over a FaZe in a group stage game to qualify for an arena match. But against the other four, no way.
By the way, that's one of those rare examples, Chad, of where I almost wish, and it doesn't sound like a random thing to say, but I almost wish Yanko did betting. Because I can tell you, if you're someone who does betting and you're like looking at the odds between every match and you're like learning from the patterns you lose, mate, this is where I would push back against Yanko. And I'd say, you realize, Yanko, you're not actually making an argument against Eternal Fire and Mongols. You're making an argument of like everyone shitting CS essentially there, mate. Because I'm with you, Chad. If they were in a group stage and you told me a matchup that's like Eternal Fire against FaZe or Liquid or any other team that you want to actually, the old Falcons, any other team that should be in that spot, if you don't think these teams, mate, I'll take the Aurora and Mongol side all day long. What are you talking about? They would win that match. And with you, yeah. The real problem, class, yeah. This is why it's justified to harp on them in the playoffs. Because, mate, there is something about playoffs just changes these guys' brains. Like, they can, like, the Eternal Fire one's even more criminal, in my opinion. Mongols has some, like, stylistic issues where they're, Eternal Fire has actually beaten everyone. Bro, they were even the ones that started the year being Vitality, for fuck's sake. Weren't they? Was that, no, Spirit maybe, was it? No, was it? Wasn't it Eternal Fire?
Eternal Fire beat Vitality.
Yeah.
In
bro, they even beat this roster. Like, they can beat literally anyone, just not in the playoffs for some reason. It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it is sad. But yeah, it's going to be hard for them to climb the mountain again, because you imagine all these established teams now are going to stay established going into the second season as well. Like, there shouldn't be too many crazy changes.
Yes.
So this is going to be a tough year now. They're going to need to really have... like, being in the lab and doing strats, that's not going to be the difference maker. Like, that is your players performing when they have to in these big games that's let you down.
Oh, and I'll throw one last little detail in as well, because you just made me think of it there. Another reason why, specifically if you're Aurora, you're in trouble now, is, bro, one of the things I actually think you got a crazy loophole and lived off for the first part of the year is a lot of the other rosters, when we all said they need a roster move, we all meant firepower. They had crazy firepower to start the year, bro. That's evened out now. Mm. Like, again, Falcons could beat you with firepower now, mate. That wasn't the case before. You would have had the edge. So I think you've also lost one of your edges, unfortunately. And then I've said it on past shows, but I don't even like to say it as a joke, because it is a real thing that's affected him. It almost sounds like a fucking meme site that, like, Xantares has back issues. Like, that's like, sounds like you're making a silly meme about all the years of Eternal Fire where you had to hard carry him. But the joke is, he's finally got the teammates that are really good, and now he's having issues himself. This is why sometimes timing is everything, guys. It just is. By the way, dog shit way to phrase that. Sometimes timing is everything. Whatever. Well, you go, Maui. Just take it away, mate.
Yeah. I mean, the whole... as soon as actually the bounty finished, in the post-game segment I did there, I was saying, and I know this got some fans upset, but who cares? I mean, it was correct. It was just that I feel like don't get used to seeing Eternal Fire performing at this level, because whereas everybody in the scene was playing catch-up because they had made roster moves... Eternal Fire had this core, and they knew the style and structure that they wanted to play. Yeah, they made their own roster move in Jota, but it's not like they... like, the embedding of Jota is a lot simpler.
Oh, it was like an instant plug-and-play pretty much, wasn't it? It was good immediately.
Yeah, it was a plug-and-play, and it was a pretty obvious upgrade for Kalix, whereas, like, you know, I don't want to rewrite history either. It's like, Rops has proven to be an upgrade, but at the time, I said that was more of like...
that was a gamble. Sure.
Sphinx was better at certain things, for sure. Yes. In my eyes, Sphinx is just a more active T-side player, which helped Vitality's T-sides. Now, Rops is a better CT-side player. Either way, regardless of like the ins and outs of the differences in Sphinx and Rops, like... EF got such a huge boost from Jota immediately, whereas other teams had to figure things out a little bit more. And I just said, kind of worry about them, like worry about the fact that they had this good run here, because if you don't capture this one, like, everybody's just playing catch up now, and everybody's willing to make moves to catch up. And that's kind of proven to be the case. Like, the tactical bed of that team is running thin. It's still good enough to get them to be a playoff, like get them into the playoffs of everything that they play. But everybody else's firepower is just better. Like, yes, YKD is steadily improving, but Xantares is a great star, but he's not a superstar in the same vein as what people have on the top five teams right now. So it's not really getting any better for them. I don't see how Mongols really upgrades either.
We'll see you there then. I tell you what, let's move on. What is your ugly point going to be, Chad?
Oh, let me get the framing of this right, what I sent you.
The way you wrote this was edgy as fuck, mate. This is like a hot take, point made take. Go on.
I was like, I'm going to be on a show with Duncan and Maui. I have to bring...
You have to read it how you wrote it. Listen to how he frit. He didn't... He wasn't at all kind of this. By the way, you definitely can't talk shit. That's CS Royalty 2, motherfucker, and he's still royal. So go on, give me the line.
Yeah, but watch me spin my way out of this one.
Come on.
Okay, my ugly point is Elige killed FaZe.
How dare you. How absolutely dare you, sir.
Now, I want everybody to imagine the phase they know and love.
Okay.
The phase in the grand finals with the epics and the scrappy 3v3s and the momentum calls. That phase is dead, right? And it will be attested, unfortunately, to Elige, because he is the man who joined the team, replacing Rops. That was never going to be a one-for-one in terms of what they contribute to the squad. But when he joined was the death of that phase that we all remember from all those years, right? The one that was so entertaining and able to play those pressure crunch games and go into overtimes, and every clutch situation was always winnable for that roster. Or, you know, the few pieces they changed over those years, that's over. So that phase that we have such romantic feelings about as Counter-Strike fans is dead. And unfortunately, Elige is the one who brought the death to that, right? Because the team can no longer function in that facet. And I sometimes, like, I just start writing like weird shit about my thoughts. And this was, I wrote this like a couple of weeks ago. I wrote this on the 9th of April about why I was thinking that FaZe just aren't good anymore.
I'm already imagining Chad writing these letters like one of those like Civil War things, Maui, where they're like, my dearest darling, tomorrow I will go out on the field. Like, go on, hit me with what thoughts you're having here, Chad. Come on.
So here we go. Let me get past the start. They're playing a 7-map pool, right? Which they're removing their opponent's strengths in a lot of these games, which in theory seems like a good thing, but just shows the lack of identity of the team. Yep. This is a team that would traditionally be able to like force their will into the server. But because they're playing this silly game of, well, we'll play all 7 and we'll just ban. Like, you're not even one of the top teams anymore. So you're not even doing that to try and be able to navigate the veto to put yourself in a good spot. You're not even good on your own maps, right? Like, what a FaZe pick. They picked us too, and it's like, well, that can be hit or miss at the best of times. So yes. They're messed up there. The Rops for Elige, sure, like both are heavily experienced players, but they're two completely different types of players. We've seen them try and recalibrate the roster throughout this season so far. And the recipe that they've gone for, even though Elige isn't performing badly, I think if people say, oh, Elige is playing badly, like that's wrong. Elige isn't playing badly, just the way that the team functions with Elige in the roster doesn't work. So it's, you're asking old players like Rain to redefine themselves at the end of his career. You have an Orpa who traditionally thrived the most in the chaos and crazy games. Like, think of any Brokey impact moment. It's not like cleanly holding a line. It's like coming through a fucking smoke with an AWP and doing something bananas, right? And getting like an impactful 2K or some shit, or winning an unwinnable clutch. They don't even have that about them anymore. Like, look at that exertion 1v4 they lost yesterday. Look at the 3v1 that they lost to fucking ZTR on Nuke in Melbourne to get eliminated. Like, the team is it's no longer built on the foundations that it once was. What else do we have in here? I've got Elige isn't here to clutch, right? Rops was a clutch factor. Elige isn't here for that. Like, he's there to be the brute force entry player.
By the way, I know I'm talking counter. I've heard you discuss this before. Don't you think that's a weird part? Because what I don't get is, I always thought Elige was doing that on call just because someone, like, no one else could do it. It's weird because I can't tell if he chooses to play this one phase or if they've made him do this. I actually expected him to be more sort of like a middle of the pack type player, mate. I'm just kind of surprised how much he is like the tip of the spear, you know.
It looks like he loves being first in. And if he didn't, then they could have definitely, like, you'd send Carrigan out to be traded, right? Or you could even in certain scenarios work with Rain. So I think that's probably what he wants to do. But either way, right, like, I just think that it's a long road back to get to the phase that people will be excited to watch play. And I just wonder how many roster changes it would even be required to get them there. And by doing so, you lose the identity of what they were anyway. So, like, my Elige killed phase is the phase that everybody loves. Phase will live on.
There was a semantic trick in there that he had activated. Okay. So it wasn't really it wasn't that Elige himself is the reason they suck. It's that he changed the complexion of phase.
He will go down, right, in the history books as phase, Elige joins phase and then phase dog shit. That's true.
That is how fans, they do think linear like that. Yeah, true.
Right?
True.
So that is what we'll go, you know, but there's nuance to it, like everything in this world. So I think FaZe are fucking cooked, long story short.
One there's a few aspects with this one. I feel like this is like the biggest green room conversation now, because the Elige stuff is very hard to touch on like public platform, simply because it's like you kind of know that it's tough to even bring it to a podcast, because it's like Elige has never been like a super great vibes guy. He's not. Yeah, he's not a great vibes guy. And it's not that he's always been a toxic asset or something like that. Like the old stories of Simple, for example, dwarf anything that I've heard regarding Elige. You know, it's like that was. That was a guy that was probably actually hurting his team's mentality significantly. But to me, Elige has just always been more of a perfectionist, and he wants to see things run in a system that he can follow. And I even said this, actually, back when Complexity was playing their, was it Bucharest event, you know, Dust said on the desk something about, like, you know, he thinks he knows the player that Grimm is. And he kind of, like, was like, you know, everything we've gotten from Grimm is, like, that's it. That's all there is. And I was kind of like, I think your mentality changes an awful lot when you have a guy next to you that, even though you respect him in a Liege, he's no longer breathing down your neck. Like, you can free up your own level of play. You're able to take the fights that you think are good. You don't have to always respond to somebody and try to explain logically, was this the perfect fight to take? The problem is that, like, even in some of the rounds where FaZe lose them, like, I think when they lost to Falcons, for example, on Ancient, there is... like, Elige is sometimes the first domino. So that's what's always confusing, too. He's not always playing as safe as he possibly can, which makes me believe, like why, who's holding him accountable, too, for some of these things. But the problem with FaZe, and it's always been the problem, even when they were in Grand Slam major winning form, is that there's always people that just make individual mistakes. They don't play off of first contact of their teammate. They go for an unnecessary and unprompted wide swing because they just want to take a fight, and that's how you lose every clutch, is a guy that just wants to take a fight that really should be a two-on-one swing or a play for first contact, get the trade kill. So I don't really... it doesn't really seem like it's within the staff or the being of FaZe to reprimand people for fundamental errors, because everybody now on the team is such a professional that they've been going through the motions for like some of these guys have careers that are like around a decade long, over a decade. So why, if you're Neo or Kerrigan, should you be going through demo footage and saying, Brokey, like, you should not have pushed here, like, wait for the team, we can flash for you? It's like, or Elige, like, who the hell is going to sit down Elige and say, Elige, in that 5v2 you guys lost on Ancient, why did you swing 2 seconds before Frozen even got to you? Like, you guys were setting up a double peek, and then you swung, because he's going to try to... It would probably lead to more harm, or at least that's how I imagine it. But there just needs to be a guy that says it. There needs to be a guy that actually sits everybody down with the authority to say, you can't do that. Like, you cannot do that if we want to play winning Counter-Strike. And that's how some of these situations devolve. That's how they lost to... I mean, Exertion's clutch was a little bit different, in all honesty. I think Exertion, the way he won that, was a little bit more through strong proactivity and kind of unexpected plays. But the way they lost to Falcons on Ancient was definitely individuals making bad plays in the moment that they never should have. Like, so I don't know about the whole idea that Elige killed FaZe. It felt like Rops just properly identified this was a fluke at Shanghai. He got off of a sinking ship that had a last hurrah, and Elige joined that ship without seeing the warning signs that were shark fins in the water surrounding that boat.
By the way, that's a perfect place to end, because one thing I wanted to reframe that Chad didn't touch on as much was last year. Bro, the worst thing for Elige ever is that FaZe was like a couple of rounds from winning the major, because it makes people in their brain... That's why, actually, I'm not even joking. Even though I'm an enormous Kerrigan stan, I actually think it would have been bad for Counter-Strike if it had been FaZe that won that major, because what it would have sent is this crazy message that, like, the season doesn't matter. It's just about if you fuck around to win the major. But if you don't know, that happened in League of Legends. Like, the T1 team was barely doing anything the whole year, and then they just fuck around to win World. That's terrible, because you want the message to be... think about the discussion we were having before about tournament formats. You want it to be that the circuit is like a mini version of the major and still has relevance and gives you an idea of the form and stuff. So if FaZe, because everyone forgets this, that second season was ass for FaZe. That was way worse than any past version. That was still with Rops. And by the way, here's the real part people don't want to talk about, because he's mega now invited. Rops was part of the reason why they sucked in that second season. Yeah. Like, that was supposed to be his team, where he's the guy who's like the best player. And bro, he was the Brokey of that season. He was the one where it's like he had the odd game that was good and he'd go, is he back? And then you'd have the two games where you were like, ah, fuck, he's not. He's actually a bit off the pace. And similar thing, you also can't. This is actually a problem, I think, with the phase dynamic is, in a weird way, I think your vibes angle's good. Because if you think about this, right? I mean, by the way, for me, even though FaZe did do that major run, the real moment they died was that moment when they just lost to Saw at Cologne. Like, that was on stage! Holy fuck! You're losing to Materis. You're FaZe. You're supposed to like you're supposed to do what you did at Shanghai and fuck around and almost win the thing. Like, not just actually capitulate to a team that nobody thought was going to then win the next match. Like, spoiler, that Vitality fucking Saw match was the worst match ever played in on a stage. Like, it was terrible. So that was already a bad look, but you just redeemed it sort of and stole the sort of credit back with the Shanghai run because it was so epic. And by the way, Rops was even good in that playoff run, so it kind of made people forget. And I think people do act like the Vitality Rops today was the one in phase. He wasn't. It's why actually when he made that comment, I got it. You know, when he made that comment, everyone donked on him for a way. He was like, I just asked for more firepower. And they were like, you're supposed to be the firepower. No, he was fully aware he wasn't though. What he meant is, I want Azimu next to me. He basically was saying, like, get Monacy or something, mate. That's what to read between the lines, that's what he was saying. He wasn't saying, I should level up and then we'll be good again. And so what I would also say is this. First of all, I think that whole season, sadly, made people have unrealistic expectations for FaZe that they haven't lived up to. Because I'll tell you what, this FaZe is nothing like that one. It doesn't even have that sort of, they fight if they're on stage, never count them out again. That doesn't even exist this year. Not the whole year. They had the one series against Vitality that looked good. That was it. That was the one brief moment that looked good. Now, I've defended them on shows, Maui, like, as in they're not terrible, but they're definitely not the old FaZe guy. And what's funny is Chad's angle, actually, I even have to agree. You know what? The vibe space angle, normally I would say, I fucking hate angles like that. That was a team that lived on vibes. I always thought The genius of FaZe was, when you know what I always say, they did it by committee with those three players. That's almost the genius of how it worked. All three of them on their own couldn't have been Azimu. But if you let them all sort of coexist and just kind of like actually make it not a high pressure environment, like notice how the thing you think about with FaZe is, you think about them winning a ridiculous round and not going like, oh my God, they'd all be laughing. They'd all be like, oh my God, Fucking Brokey's done it again. Oh, you thought you had the round one, but Rops did a crazy 1v4. Lol, check this out. Look at fucking, Rain popped off when you thought he was the old man. Like, I always thought in a weird way, I'll give you a mad abstract angle, there's actually a concept in the occult, believe it or not, that one of the things you can do to banish evil entities and spirits and demons is laugh, because the idea is, what the thing that they hate is the idea you sort of mock them or you don't take them seriously, because part of the idea of the occult is the notion that you connect in with your like imagination in a way, and if you believe something's real, you believe it's scary, it has power over you. But if you laugh, it's a banishing effect where it makes it like, see, in a weird way, I think that's what, that is part of the FaZe magic, that they were the only team I've ever seen, by the way, even all-time great teams don't do this. Like, by the way, Astralis was super serious. You think of Fnatic back in the day, they were all playing, they were all quiet. The craziest thing ever about FaZe magic is they would play like it was a for fun game, but it would be like a semi-final of a stage arena game. And you almost felt like, for real, they're almost thinking in the 1v3, like, lol, and then I'm going to stand up and then Carrigan's going to be like, are you entertained? They were almost like, it was like wrestling. They were prepared for the fucking spots and everything was crazy. That FaZe has not existed this year. And so in that sense, you are right, Chad, because I'll tell you what, that is not Elysia's personality. I'll tell you right now. He should be, like I said, in an old, really seriously, an Astralis team where, we have like, the joke is we win the game, but then Magus and Glaive have an half an hour argument about how we could have won better on Inferno or something. Like, that's the sort of team he's built for. So I have to say, even though he's not to blame for that, he clearly doesn't add vibes in that regard. Like, if people don't know, I know Rops is quiet, but he has that like quirky sense of humor where he has that weird, almost like Zoomer fucking
troll.
Yeah, like he's almost the magics of their team in some ways, with the weird things he's into and the silly angles and stuff. So I think people do probably miss that angle. Like, I do think that's part of why that team had the ultimate, like, we're always just loose, bro. We're always just loose in these games. They're not now, by the way. They are tight as fuck right now, mate. Are you kidding me? That's the other thing that I hate as well. I know, I forget who said it on Twitter, but it's true. Who the fuck wants to see Carrigan do the 78th? If you're old school, you remember this. He's now at the point, Chad, where because in the server he can't do anything, he's doing what Pasha and Taz did for the last 2 years of VP. You just apologise on Twitter every time you lose.
Yeah.
You just put a mildly sad tweet so people go, hey, you're a legend, bro, keep your head up. And then you go and then you try to do what I said earlier, what Magus doesn't do. You try and sort of appeal to the fans. Like, sorry, I know it's bad. Don't worry, I'm going to try and improve. I'll do my best, The problem with that is, though, when you come from being the most sort of like, lol, we're wearing like a leather jacket on a fucking motorbike, lol, I might just fuck around and win this event. That guy can't be the one like, hey, but actually, I've got to open up. I'm really vulnerable. Actually, right now, I'm not really in the best place. Like, I don't want to hear that apart from the cool guy. So I'm with you. Like, the real problem with this is Fears is dead as a team. What you loved about Fears doesn't exist. And some of it is that Elise is in the roster. I agree with that. And by the way, the sad thing about the squad is, though, he is the second best player of the team. Like, Frozen's really good. I still think he's really good. By the way, I actually think the one person who's benefited from this year is Frozen. He just looks really good no matter what the floor of the team is. My problem is, though, I do think Elise is good, but I just want to quickly reference one thing, which is I'm going to do what all the fans do. I am going to hate on Brokey like a motherfucker. And the reason why is this. Because, bro, this is what I hate. That I'm not normally someone who thinks a stat can isolate something, but I think this stat is crazy. So, you know, when people love to do the whole opening kills thing, they normally do it for the aggressive rifle, the exertions of the world, the Zantaras, because of the Elysias. You want to see, like, when he's in call, oh my God, he has like the 25% entry rate, but he just like 58%. That's when you know that guy's like, one, being leaned on, but also, normally, obviously, it's the opposite for the AWPers, right? Because a traditional AWPer doesn't go first, he sits back and he goes. So, normally, AWPers have the really low percentage of chances and attempts at opening kills, right? Brokey's is impossibly low. I looked this all up while you were talking. Brokey's opening round attempted kill on T-side for the year is 9%. Now, my problem with that, Chad, is he isn't fucking Shiro. He's not even... Shiro, by the way, is 11%. I looked up the others. No one else is close. The closest one, the only one that's close is actually Torji. But Torji has all the fucking aggressive riflers in the world. And he's winning games. So my problem with this is, if you were actually Brokey, if you were a traditional AWPer and you had those stats, you'd actually be farming numbers, mate. You'd be crazy. But that's not even your game, are we, you, Chad? Brokey's style is like the JW. I go close range and I do all crazy moves and I sort of almost like dodge and make you miss, then I hit the shot, then I go through the smoke, then someone flashes me, but lol, I got a no scope anyway. Like that player can't be never having an opening kill attempt. Like, that almost implies to me, because that's the other thing. If you saw the Nero article about how everyone in Phase just trades Elise now, bro, they've almost like become cynical as a squad. That almost feels like that behaviour you do at the end where you know one person's getting kicked, you just make sure it's not you. Yeah. You know that shit where you're like, you go, it's like you go first, mate. Like, because if I'm Brokey, here's the one problem I have, and I want to throw it back to you because I want to see what you guys think of Brokey. Don't worry, I've kicked my hand the time, Maui. The thing I want to ask about Brokey is this. My problem is, if he just made all the same plays but didn't hit, I could accept it. But I feel like he himself even got a little bit more like in his own head and a little bit more part. He's just not in games as much. Like, I want you to at least go for the play, you know what I mean? Like, I can live or die off that, but I feel like even he's been mentally broken, as it were.
I think the mentally broken part is the point right there that I'd be on. I think out of all the players in the team, losing Rops and probably to some extent losing Twists, I think Frozen probably fits in like okay for a Twist replacement personality-wise. But I don't think Brokey's going to be responding well to like the size down the microphone and that type of shit. Like I don't know Brokey very well, but just from, you know, the brief interactions I've had with him, that type of stuff, he would probably internalize and it would fucking tilt him, right? Like and those little things, even though they're small, they throw people's focus off. Like they lose games, like, because, you know, people start seeing, maybe not red, but they're not seeing clearly, that's for sure. So yeah, I think like the Brokey one at the moment, I think he could like go to another team. I don't know what team that would be, and he would have better output. I think like this has run its course now. Right? Yes. They tried to plug another hole. Right, the boat got the leak when Twists didn't re-sign. They bring in Frozen. Okay, that works. Like, we've got a bunch of guys who have had success with Frozen before, but this is too big of a gap to fix now. The team is just
by the way, you referenced it earlier, but I think actually you nailed the lens, but I'll make it harsher. Right, an obvious problem if you're looking at phases, and think of past phases, this wasn't true at all. They don't have one map they're truly world-class on. It's worse than that, bro. Think about in your mind what their top three maps would be, and it's already game over, mate. Like, we don't need to have this conversation. Like, they have no map pool. Like, you're right. Carrigan, if people don't get this, before, Carrigan would use the map pool as a weapon. Bro, he's using it now to, like, fucking stop the bleeding. Like, he's just desperately trying to scramble anywhere he can in the map pool. Like, I can tell you, someone who follows those patterns is a really bad... It's not like there's nowhere... There is literally nowhere else to go in the map pool, Chad. They've tried everything. Like, and when you get to that point where you really have tried everything... Remember, most teams won't. They're all stubborn on map. He's tried everything, I'm telling you guys. He's tried every band-aid fix. He's tried changing his pick a million times. Like, there's nothing... That tells me you just exhausted the roster. There's nothing you can do at this point. And I think the results just... This is one where there's not even like a big emotional damage. Like, surely everyone in the team knows it's time for a roster move. Even, by the way, as you say, Chad, even if you're the one getting kicked, like, I tell you what, people are going to think this is a meme. I'm not joking. I do think Brokey, if he went elsewhere, could be better. By the way, maybe G2 should get Brokey. Yeah. This is the sorts of teams I think could, like, reinvent this guy, of course.
Yeah, the Brokey thing is so... I feel like every take I've made about Brokey has aged so crazily well. Like the one about, I said last year around the time of his Chengdu MVP on Hot Take Point Made that I would still, I would take Torzy today over Brokey.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
If I'm building a team, because it's just that he plays the game the right way. And that also Brokey is, I mean, his, you talk about the T side opening percentages. I was looking at it the other day, so maybe it changed, but like, I think of the last 3 months, he had the opening percentage of kill attempts as Zontix on CT side.
Fucking hell.
It's like, dude, it's just way too passive. And the way he goes through a round is so unlike anything of what a modern opera should probably do, where it's like even if you get Shiro on CT side, you know, he's going to go for like bottom con pick. He's going to move to the top of con, take a shot there. Yeah, you get like, there's this like routing. There's like, yes, there's a way to get four shots off in a round, and the only way you're blocked from those like really good utility, you gotta keep the offense, yes, honest by you just putting yourself in positions where you can pick them off thin the numbers. But it always feels like by the time Brokey gets activated in a round, he's playing under balcony on Mirage, and then he has to try to quick scope two people. Yes. It's like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just, it's like he's like, if for some reason the only demos that Brokey is watching are from 2016. He's watching simple demos and he's watching Fallen demos. Okay. And it's like, dude, this is not how you're supposed to learn the game. Like, please, for the love of God, just watch like one Shiro demo. Like, I'm begging you. Because if you could just route through a round, you could use that impressive skill. And also the other thing, I don't think Brokey double scopes enough. I don't think he double scopes at range. I feel like he's single scoped. And then when someone's crossing his screen, like, I just have so little faith in him actually hitting the shot, because it's like, it's just, it is just harder in CS2. I'll just be real. It's harder in CS2 if you're not double scoped on long range shots to hit it. So that's why it's always like, I think of Monacy holding angles, and he hits these crazy flicks while double scoped, and he almost has to flick off of his scope sometimes. But it's like, yeah, he does it and it looks insane. And I'm not saying everybody can do it, but he's double scoped. The whole point is he's double scoped. Like, I don't feel like Brokey is clicking right click twice. Like, just please hit it. Hit it a second time.
Okay. All right, let's move on to Bowie. What is your ugly point?
I'm listening to this. I need to run to the bathroom before I piss myself, but all I can hear. Okay. So
yeah, keep going. Go for it.
Okay, sure. My ugly point sort of factors in, and it's kind of just the other side of the fact that the top scene is really good, but It's in the similar vein to the fact that Aurora and the Mongols have missed their window, but it's just that the scene has a chasm between fourth and fifth in a power ranking.
Oh, for sure.
If we're going to say that the world number one is Vitality, and you put two through four in any order of Mao's, Spirit, and Falcons, the fifth team, I don't even, in a power ranking, I legitimately don't know who it is.
No.
Like, I would have to sit down and really consider carefully who I think the fifth best team in the world is, because it's not close.
Yes.
The Mongols have missed consecutive playoffs. Aurora is a team that has shown they can make playoffs, but they can lose to anybody in those playoffs, including Complexity. Like, the loss to Complexity is where, true, I was just like, my God, I sold all my... the moment they lose one map in that series, I'm like selling all of my Aurora stock immediately. And then Na'Vi has just been also a shell of themselves. I kind of want them via the eye test to put them as my number five. But even then, their results at some of these tournaments are not too impressive. Like Lisbon, they made it to the playoffs. They lost there. Melbourne, they missed the playoffs, losing to Liquid. And I almost, in a weird way, would want to say, if I'm predicting for the future, I'd want Liquid to be my fifth power ranked team. But I still feel like they're so far away from anything that Mao's Spirit or Falcons are putting out there right now that it's more just like I'm betting on the future than anything I'm seeing in the present. So yeah, I think the scene is really cool in that the top four, anybody can beat each other, even if Vitality is winning these matches. But beyond that, I just don't see anybody really punching into that space. And it's for the neatness of numbers and how humans like to round them, it'd be nice if we had a cool top five instead of a top four.
I think like G2's drop off like it makes us feel even worse, right? Or the expected drop off, right? Like, you look at what they're left with, and with what you're saying, you're looking at the rest of the field. I hope that one of the Mongols or Aurora make that Eureka breakthrough moment, right? Like that could help to kind of lock in that fifth spot, maybe sixth spot, because one of the two of them making good on what they've offered so far, that'd be great. I think it'd be good also to have a national team performing. Well, we got Spirit, so I'll pocket that for a second. But yeah, FaZe are fucked. I agree with what you said with Liquid, you know, but that is that you said betting on the future. I just wonder how much they can get out of Nerds, Twists, and Ultima, essentially. Like, how far can that trio go? Because it doesn't sound amazing on paper. It also doesn't sound terrible, but I guess as we're comparing it to the field that's around it. If I took Liquid, Na'Vi, and FaZe and I tried to mash that together to make one good team, I think I'd still probably even struggle to have one that I'm really happy with. Like, that's kind of fucked.
Sure.
That's giga fucked. I don't know. I'm trying to think back historically because, you know, these type of conversations always where you go, okay, well, when did we have a point where, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 was really dense in terms of the competitiveness? And it's just hard to rack through my brain to even think of a time where
probably be the end of CSGO,
that would have been the case. Yeah. Yeah. You when know, everyone was like,
when you had the Ensis of the world still in the mix and, you know, some of those squads are around.
I think more than it's just being 5, 6, 7, 8 being weaker than number one or something, it's just like the split. It's so obvious where it is. Yes. And that's what I find.
So stratified. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not necessarily like, cause I think in history, usually like the number five team has a good chance to place better than the number four team in a tournament.
Sure. Yes.
I just don't find that to be the case anymore as much.
Oh, no, I know what you mean. To be more explicit, he doesn't just mean the gap between number four and number five. He means all of the top four would basically beat everyone below them every time, pretty much. So I know what you mean, because you still get the odd matchup back in the day where it would be like, you know, the number 17 could beat number three because it's some good matchup. But that doesn't exist, I'm with you. By the way, on this topic then, let me think what to say. All right, here's why I actually think it is the case as well. Because you're right, once you get out of those top four, now we put Falcons in there because they've had a couple of events where they've obviously proven it. If you look at the other squads, one of it is just Na'Vi's just withered on the tree. Now, that one's just died of its own accord. G2 obviously had its best player taken, so they're just crippled at the moment. Aurora and Mongols, I just discussed earlier, their problem is they can beat anyone in the group stage, but they just, like... You can, by the way, again, as someone who bets, you can incredibly cynically win against these guys in the playoffs. Like, essentially, they have to play a team that's like almost as weak as them or also has stage problems. It's why the joke is one of the early wins Mongols got was just playing Eternal Fire. It's like, give me a fucking break, which I always hate, by the way, that shit where it's like, hey, I choke, you choke. Wow, I won. I guess I don't choke. It's like someone had to win the game. But anyway, that's just how narratives work. So the last thing I'll say is this. If you look at the other squad, I'm with you, Maui. The only team that saves this is actually Liquid because they just haven't had enough time yet, but they do look like already they can be something much better. And you just think of like the actual players. The other problem you have if you're Eternal Fire and Mongols is the name value of your players, because you haven't done it on stage, isn't high enough. The difference is I have seen Nerds carry a stage game. I have seen fucking Twists be one of the best players. Like, these ones I can sort of rely that they'll do something in the squad. So I'm with you. If they became the actual real fifth best team, I think it would sort of fix the rankings to some degree. And at least I could believe they could be in what you just said. That's it. I could believe there's a world where, like, pick one of the four. Maybe it's Spirit or something. Maybe, like, Team Liquid bizarrely match up against Spirit because they have the Anubis or something. I don't know what it could be. But, you know, I could see they could, that could potentially be the game changer. Obviously, it hasn't come into play yet, though. It's a good point, though. Right, the last point of the show, I purposely picked this as my ugly. It was actually referenced earlier, so it's good timing here, boys. My ugly is going to be this. It's going to be the position Grimm has put himself in Complexi. It's going to sound weird, and here's why. Because, bro, I'm actually really worried about this player. Because right now, he is fucking smurfing. He is killing it. He's doing the best job you could possibly... He really has replaced Elise. Even, by the way, it's like aggressive T-side. He's doing everything with the rifle you'd want. He's literally what everyone who was a Cole fan when Elise joined. And when he joined... This is what you all hoped when he joined Team Liquid. But here's why I say I put it in ugly. Because I now should, in theory, Chad, as an analyst, if I exclude all intangibles, I should now do the same campaign for Grimm I just did the last year and a half for Elige. Of like, look, you're way better than your team relies on your tons, you should be in phase, you should be in Liquid. But this is where I put it in ugly, because bro, this can't be a coincidence now. So this guy, back in the COVID era, when he was on Triumph and the whole team was him, he was a demon. Then when he went to Liquid, he just became the guy who sat in the corner shyly while everyone else fucking danced in that meme. And he was like, they don't even know I could actually carry this game if I wasn't so humble and mild-mannered. He's doing it again. Bro, can it really be a coincidence that when Elige was there, he was mid, and the second Elige walks out the door, he's fucking popping off again. Here's what I'm worried about. Here's the ugly point. I don't think Grimm can actually operate in a team with bigger personalities. I actually think if you... Here's the thing. There's players like this. I would actually say, if you don't know, that Flamey from Na'Vi was like this. If there's no one there to sort of alpha them, And you tell them, you're the man, dude. You're the man, dog. Shout out to that quote from Sean Connery, look it up. If you tell him you're the man, dog, and set the game up, mate, Flamey was a demon. He could be really good at the game. But if you put, like, big names and superstars, simple electronic, mate, he'll just wither. He'll fade into the shadow. I get scared that that's who Grimm has become. Because, like I say, if I'm going to do a campaign, he should be on a bigger team. Well, I'm going to be really bummed out, mate, if he goes to Liquor off his and immediately goes back down again, and it's just worthless. So what do you guys think of this? Am I making a mountain out of a molehill? Where are we going on this?
He's nowhere near as accomplished though as an elite.
No, of course.
It'd be hard to go to bat for him in any meaningful way. Like, what is Complexity's biggest win? Like, even with Elysium,
oh, they had a few.
Sydney final, right?
No, but they got some decent scalps, mate.
They had that.
Oh, you mean actually Copenhagen overall, right?
Yeah.
Well, they had that Copenhagen run where they were 2-0. They were going to make it to the playoffs, and then they lost to like Vitality, FaZe, and then I forgot who the last team was, like a spirit type team. Like, it was like a really, really hard run. And they had three top five teams back to back to back, and they almost beat two of them. Or it was Malice was one
sure.
of them, actually. Yeah. But they didn't.
I think the sentiment of this guy getting stunlocked as fuck by Elige, right? Because it was two stints. It wasn't just the Cole stint.
Exactly.
It was the Liquid time as well.
Yep.
Right? So, yeah, I don't know how we would go with all bigger personalities, but I would say certain particular types of personalities being Elige, one of them. I don't think he should ever be on a team with Elige again, right? Like, if you want a good output,
okay,
that's a guarantee. But also, like, putting him on a better team, I guess that's where I have to set my expectations a little bit differently, right? If we're talking maybe like a Gamer Legion level or something like that, then yeah. But like, okay, starting to get in the higher territory after that, I wouldn't be going out to bat for the guy. I haven't seen enough in games that actually matter okay. of him playing as a carry player to be that guy. So, yeah, if you're getting him on Gamer Legion or fucking maybe Astralis, won an American at some point, who knows what the fuck's going on over there. But otherwise, yeah, I don't think he's big team material.
I'm not sure if I really... I don't know if Grimm is like... completely him yet. I think like
this is why stats are everything, boys, because he's really high in the stats. I'll tell you, if you go look, he's got some fucking killer stats, mate. I'm with you though. I also don't think
his stats this year are insane. They're I feel like it's just that Grimm is just leveled up as a player. I don't think we have really figured out exactly what the prime is of any player, because sure. so many people start playing Counter-Strike at different ages. But like, I feel like young 20s or like mid 20s, 24 is where you're supposed to probably peak right now. That if I just had to make a guess, that's what he's 24. He's kind of right at the age of like, you know, four-ish years of tier one experience. And now he's found out the player that he is. He is supposed to be one of the stars of this team. And now he's taking the reins on that. I think we've just seen a leveled up version of him. I don't know. I mean, I'm not betting on him tomorrow to outfrag FaZe Clan in a stadium game or anything like that. But in a group stage, if this is what we're going to get from Grimm, and the conversation shifts from, ooh, wow, so much potential that is not realized, to now he's entering in the Staun territory of, we know you're good in group stages, but I don't know what you can do in playoffs. That's good. That's a good progression for Grimm. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Complexity. I think that Grimm, if he and Hulzer can prove to be the stable, high-performing players, and then the X-Factors are more like Sixy and Nyx, then we're in a very good position if I'm Complexity. Like, it just feels like this... Like, yeah, he can't work with maybe bigger personalities, and maybe... But I don't really... I feel like if Complexity does what's right for them, and they kind of, like, work even within their own budget, which I've kind of heard of in the past... They're not probably going to sign a mega big personality. Like,
they don't have the money as far as I know,
Yeah. So, like, it's not even like it's on the table that's suddenly going to happen, that they're going to get some simple type personality or Elige clone. It's just like, if anything, what they're going to look for next is if Sixy and Nyx don't work out in the season or long term, then they're just going to find a better anchor or a better aggressive rifler. And that's very, very, like, now you have a star rifler, you have a really serviceable opper at tier one, and you have an IGL that can even frag at a pretty decent level. So, like, I think your core is fine if your aspirations are like if Complexity's reaching to be the, you know, just break into the top 10. I think they have the core to do that now. You just need to move around the pieces or hope that they level up.
I don't know about your take though that like he's like entering the same status as Elige where it's like, is he gonna have to leave? Like, I don't think he's gonna have to. I don't think teams are frothing.
No, but I think that conversation is automatically activated by the stats. If people see the stats that he has, you're gonna think he's better than the squad. You're gonna put him in the mix of like, well, if you need someone to rifle, get this guy. Because by the way, what made me think of this take is when they had this PGL Bucharest run, people tried doing that whack thing of like, lol, Cole's better without Elige. Mate, if fucking Grim and Elsa could be playing this when Elige was there, they'd have been in fucking finals. What are we talking about? Like, the whole point is Grim didn't used to play like this. I mean, Olzik did sometimes, but Grim definitely didn't play like this, mate. Come on. He's a different person the second Elige left.
The funny thing is that a team that would probably want a Grim-like player right now is with how NAF's been performing on Liquid, they get Grim again for NAF, but then personality issue of like is Twists gonna then be the new Elige person? Like,
then Grim walks in.
Sun Grim.
Then Grim walks in and it's like, you know, he's looking at the ground, scared to look at the alpha in the eyes, you know, like fucking chip dynamics or something again. Like, you know, fucking.
I know. I don't want that. I don't want that at all. I want him to stay. I want him to stay, and I just want Sixy and Nyx to get a bit more acclimated to tier one.
They already made a good step though. So positive signs for the Cole camp.